Hi, this is Rick Emerson, and the following encore of The Rick Emerson Show is brought to you by Squires Electric. Whether it's electrical wiring, Ethernet wiring, or wiring of any kind at all in your home or business, Squires Electric can make your life easier. Find out more at squireselectric.com or call 503-252-1609. Squires Electric.
Deep in the jungle. In a corrupt third world country.
I want to know what the hell's going on, Colonel.
If you're looking for soldiers.
You're timing your schedule for another job?
If you want to start a war. And you want no questions asked. You call in the Freedom Fighters.
Money talks, Colonel.
Peter Fonda is a leader of freelance mercenaries.
Let's go!
For the right price, his men are ready to pick up any gun.
That is one nasty dude.
Eager for any action. And willing to face any enemy.
Back! Look out!
But even for the freedom fighters, there are some things money can't buy.
When your boys start pointing guns at my boys, we don't smile back.
They've been double-crossed.
On the wrong side, man!
And left for dead. Now it's time to settle the score. Freedom Fighters.
Is it the power in his hands? Is it his quest for glory? Give it all you got to fight to the top, so we can know your story. Now you're a man, a man, man, man. Now you're a man, a man, 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 a man, man, man. You are now a man, you're a man. Now you're a male. Live it, live it. What makes a man? Is it the woman in his arms? Just 'cause she has big titties? Or is it the way he fights every day? No, it's probably the tears. Now you're a male. Yeah. Oh, my, oh, my, oh, my. Now you're a male. Yeah. My, my, oh, my, my, oh, my. Now you're a male. M-A-N, man, 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 man. Now you're a moron. We'll be right back.
Why, hello, it is 22 minutes after the hour of one, and this is the month of February in the year of our Lord 2011. Thank you for coming by, making a part of your listening day. We are live from the plushly appointed yet not overly ostentatious studios of the Emerson News Network. Thank you for joining us. It is Friday, and welcome to day 12. It's Friday, February 18th, 2011. Now we're coming to you live from the milkpacking district here of Southeast Portland, Oregon, the home of all good things, high atop the Emerson News Network building. The monolith, the obelisk, towering above the rest of humanity, viewing them as so many insignificant ants as we continue our rise, our ascendance to the throne of power.
And just recently buzzed by Obama.
Seriously, like twice in one morning. I'm almost afraid to open the window to look outside because I just assume we're ringed by Secret Service agents at any given moment. All right, I'm going to shut them. So we thought it was going to happen the once, and then just now, literally like 5 minutes ago, I hear this with boom, 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 and I look outside, and there's the two Marine One helicopters. And there's got to be regulations to cover all this. I mean, there's like a football field apart or something, but they're identical. I mean, they're exactly so if you were some ne'er-do-well, if you were some hooligan bent on, not that I would ever do this because Rick Emerson wishes all elected officials a long life and the best of health. If you were bent on some sort of menace, some sort of violence, I mean, I guess we were saying earlier, you'd have no better than a 50-50 chance. I mean, really, in the best case scenario from your criminal perspective.
Unless, you know, you have a partner. And there's two of you.
Well, not that I would advocate that, Don.
With rocket launchers
or
whatever.
But as Jim Willig said, he's in the kitchen right now, he's in the kitchen right, I don't know what he's doing, but he's huddled over his computer and he's twitching a lot. He's got headphones on, and on the screen, I would occasionally see what appeared to be an elf pop up, and then a big fireball would go, and then he would kind of cackle to himself and continue to press keys on the keyboard. So I don't know what he's doing in there. It's something very exciting.
And then he came in and said, can I have one of those Vizos?
By the way.
And then he went back to, like, killing orcs or whatever he's doing.
FYI, we should actually tell the rest of that story, then we'll sort of get underway. We'll just touch briefly on yesterday. We'll talk about what's coming up today. We'll try to operate as efficiently as possible because there's a whole lot of stuff to get done in. Not like that, we're short on time. But we want to try to get out of here at a reasonable time today. You know, normally, of course, we'd be happy to talk until the cows come home, as I would today. Mm-hmm. But there's something happening this afternoon that we're going to talk about here in just a second. But I got to say, just now, since we were preparing the transition from Leadstrom News to this very fine radio program, so Big Jim, who, by the way, I swear to you, was here at like 8:30 this morning. I don't think he has a home.
Aww.
He was actually, I'm not saying that in a mocking sort of a way. He was actually here. I don't mean to make fun. I really don't. But Sarah and Greg taped really early this morning. I got here at like 9:30, 10 o'clock or something. And Sarah and Greg had actually already taped and finished and wrapped up. And they were getting ready to leave. And Jim was actually here as well. And I said, hey, because I think he was pimping this show that he's doing. I swear to God, at a marijuana dispensary. And I said, hey, Jim was here. And Greg's like, yeah, he was here when we got here this morning. So I don't know if he's just sort of, like if this is his new home and nobody has told us. But
I don't know. It has to be. This can't be like his first choice for out of work, though, because those little stools at the high counter that we have in there in the kitchen, it's not the most comfortable place to sit and work.
Yeah,
it's really not.
So you would think. But he came in just now, I don't know, like 10 minutes ago as we were preparing the transition from one show to another. And he kind of opens the door and he sticks his head and he goes, hey, not a big deal, but... And he addressed this just to the room in general, just to Don and I both. And he says, would you mind if I have one of those Vizos in the fridge? And of course, Rick Emerson responded by saying, no, have at it, go ahead. Don responded by saying, don't take the will.
Yeah.
And that was it.
Yeah.
So, and you know, I'm just saying, I'm not saying that I'm a better or more generous person than you are, but I'm saying the comfort of one's friends, generosity is job one when you're Rick Emerson.
But I will say, though, if there were not multiple Vigors in there, would you have still said, sure, go ahead?
No, it's a lot easier because I have four of them.
Yeah.
Because I can't ever use it. I've realized now that I can no longer, I have to give myself a cushion because too many days have I come here and it's like we'll get to about 1:15, 1:30 and I say, well, it's time for my second Vizo of the day and I'll go onto the kitchen and I open it and it's just a real big empty in there. There's just a whole lot of nothing. And then it's like I got to do that thing. Then it's like facing a series of emasculating events one after the other in rapid succession. Because first I have to admit that I'm just wholly and solely addicted to caffeine, just beyond the point of any sort of redemption. Then I got to admit that it's bad enough that I will actually leave the building and go down the street to the deli. And then I have to admit that I actually can't walk or run any distance of greater than 5 feet without wheezing. because I will come back. I mean, and literally, even if it's just running, and I have done this, by the way, let's have no illusions. I have actually run down the stairs of the building to my car, which is like 10 feet away, so I can drive, no lie, and if you've been here, you know it is true, I can drive one block, possibly less, one block to the deli, run and get the Vizo, drive a block back here. It's like you just those Aerosmith documentaries where they talk about being taken by limo to the stage, which is 25 yards away from the dressing room. And then I'll run back up the stairs, but I'm still just... So just sounding like I've been harvesting ragweed all day.
Now, I mentioned this many months ago when we first started this venture, but perhaps it bears bringing up again. You and I are actually, you know, owners of this fine venture.
Yes, true.
We are business partners and owners of the venture. We both not only drink Vizo, we need Vizo to function in our job. It seems to me it would behoove us to just use company funds to buy it, like, say, wholesale.
I like what you're saying, but I was going around it a different way in my head. Just as you were giving a little intro there, I immediately leapt to the conclusion that we should just demand that Alex give us some free Vizo.
Well, there is that. We could do that, but I don't know if we're really in a position to demand anything, really. But we could.
Don, one must act as a media titan to become a media titan. You're never going to get anywhere if you have such a negative self-image.
Well, if the demanding doesn't get... At the very least, we ought to be able to get a hefty discount.
Let me tell you about a little word called entitlement. That's a word that has served me very well in my life. If one just acts as though one deserves things, then you'll find that you run into a lot less resistance. And people are just willing to accommodate your needs for fear of a tantrum of some kind.
We need very few things to do this job. We need the microphones. We need electricity. We need laptops. We need a printer with the printer paper and the ink. And we need Vizo. That's basically it. That's all we need. And the Vizo is every bit as important as the printer, ink, and the laptops.
It's true. I also need a minion of some sort, just at any given moment.
We need to restart this whole search for an intern thing.
Yeah, I know.
We need a guy.
A guy just emailed me the other day, actually, offering to be an intern, and it's like on the pile of things I need to get to. But the guy emailing to become an intern, it's like I looked at that for just... I'm basically just some sort of... I'm an electronic magpie. I looked at that for about 5 seconds. This guy, you know, I am a graduate student at a local broadcasting university, and I would be interested in being an intern for the Emerson News Network. And so I was reading that, and I didn't even finish it. I didn't even get to the end of the email because I was distracted. I swear to God, 10 seconds later by this email.
No, not yet. This guy actually has credentials of some sort.
Well,
he's not like just crazy homeless guy.
I haven't seen them. Well, not like the two things are mutually exclusive. Look
is
at that.
Like I play hacky sack and I eat at food carts. Can I come be your intern?
You've been hanging out with Kenny again. So I was like halfway through that email. I didn't even get to the end because then it was like, you know, you get the little like ding when a new email arrives. And so I'm like, well, that's interesting. A guy's offering to be our intern. Ding. What's this? The subject line is, did you get the cranky that I sent? Rick, did you get the bags of cranky that I sent? Good stuff. I eat two bags at a sitting. I wonder how they cover the flakes without any of them sticking together. Enjoy, Ryan. So, Ryan, I'd like to tell you that...
Somebody said you're right there, cranky.
I did, in fact. And right there, he didn't even write it out. He actually printed. Pleased to note, he actually took he made it a professional label here. It just says Emerson News Network. Inside,
nice.
two boxes of chocolatey, crispy cranky. So I'll be opening that here in just a few.
That's nice.
So, and then I just completely forgot. And he sent it first class. So then I just completely forgot about the intern guy. So I'll get back to that now that the important business of... and let me just tell you, I hate to complain. That's not true. I hate to complain about... I hate to complain about guys at the post office because I feel like the guys at the post office, not that they get a bad rap, but they're such an easy target.
Yeah.
You know, that everybody makes fun of the guys at the post office, and they get tagged, you know, the Cliff Clavin thing, and, you know, there's that going postal store that Cheryl took a photograph of because, you know, it seems like there's always a guy going in and giving everybody what for with the end of a gun. So, and plus, insulting or making fun of or complaining about the postal guy, it just, you feel like a comedian who's talking about, like, you know, cats are one way, but dogs are another way. And then I flew here, and hey, let me tell you about that food. And, you know, and it's like, you just feel like such a hack. But I got to tell you, I won't say where. I don't want to be specific, because I don't want to incur their wrath. And then also, you know, I don't want to pick on, it seems like I'm picking on a specific guy or whatever. But you know, the post office where this stuff sits, goddamn, it's just the worst customer service on earth. And it's not like they're all that way. I mean, I get great customer service or decent customer service that is comparable to other businesses quite a lot of the time at the post office. But this place... I swear to God, the place where our post office box is, it's got to be, it must just be where they stick everybody who has caused trouble somewhere else. Or that, like, Or where they like, they stash people that they can't fire, but that they don't want to inflict on the rest of the public. Because I think it must be very, even in these trying economic times, don't you think it's difficult to get fired by the post office?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it doesn't seem like a place where they can just be, you know, routing people out all the time.
My post office out in the burbs in Tualatin, there's, and I know I've mentioned this before, there's two separate facilities. And they definitely have that understanding of the difference between people who are spending money and not spending money.
Yeah.
Because if you go to the post office where you are sending things, it's really clean and bright and beautiful and lovely. And there's the bank of post office boxes on your left. And then you walk in and there are these big spacious counters to work at. And there's even a secondary counter over to one side for the special gift wrappy boxes if you want the one that has Mickey Mouse on it and stuff like that. And they're friendly and they're helpful. Like, come over here. Let me carry that for you. That's great. But if you want to pick something up, if you get that slip that says you have to come to the post office, you go there and they go, oh, no, that's not here. That's like a mile down the road at the other place.
Can't help you.
And you go to the other place and you walk in and it is this dank, dirty, concrete gulag with this one little bulletproof glass window with a guy sitting behind it and in a stained shirt. And you go up and you hand him the thing through the slot in the glass and he goes, I'll be right back. And he goes off. I swear, you know, he's not actually chomping on a cigar butt, but he ought to be.
Have you gone to the package pickup place that's in Selwood?
No.
So there's a package. It's one of those things where you, it doesn't seem like it could actually be part of the post office. Like it seems like the post office might just be, I don't know, they're just sort of franchising things out at some point. But I mean, I don't know. If you have a package that has been sent and it's too big, I guess, to be delivered to your house, or maybe you miss the drop off. It's like when FedEx, you miss a FedEx drop off or a UPS or whatever. Like, yeah, I got to go to their place to pick it up. And the UPS is like out by the airport or whatever. But if you miss something for the post office, it goes to this place. If you're in Southeast, it goes to this place in Selwood. And I swear to God, I walked in there and the guy behind the counter had like cut off jeans with like the white strings hanging down. And he had one of those like kooky shirts that was like Alcatraz swimming team and Oakley sunglasses. The kind that they used to sell, the kind that Brian Bosworth used to advertise in 1989. They said thermonuclear protection on the ads. And he's just back there just, I mean, he's like the delivery guy from Better Off Dead. Where, you know, he's just like at the front listening to Foxy Lady and talking about how much he wants to bonk my girlfriend. It was the weirdest. And it's like he's not wearing a name tag or a badge. It could be one of those stories where he was robbing the joint and then just stuck around for a while to see if he could get money from people who came in. It's the strangest thing. Also, on the front of the door, there's a huge sign which covers a slightly smaller sign, which covers a slightly smaller sign. You can see the layering as though every time they think the sign is big enough, they discover that it's not. And it says, after ringing bell, because you got to ring a bell to get inside, after ringing bell, take several steps back. Door is heavy and opens without warning. So clearly they've dislodged a whole lot of teeth over the years, and they keep getting a bigger sign, thinking that, like, the sign is the problem somehow.
They're still not seeing the sign.
Yeah.
Make it bigger.
Because that's where the fault lies. So, and anyway, so thank you to listener Ryan for... Jim Willig's never had the cranky. He's never had the he never had the glorious wonder of... So this is from Ryan, listens to us in Gladstone. Speaking of listening, we want to say hello to listener David. David says, hello, Rick. I am home sick today. I am listening to the show live. So hello and greetings and salutations to you.
Hi, David.
A lot of people who actually listen, and I hear these, I'll get emails from people like this a couple times a week, actually. People who listen to the show every day, they listen to it via podcast or something, or they'll get it on the stream or something later on. But they somehow, I guess maybe because most, if not all, but maybe most online offerings or most podcasts or whatever you want to call it, most things that people download are not also done live. Most, like if you go, like you listen to the Freakonomics podcast or something. It's not like the Freakonomics guys are in a studio and they're streaming it out live and then you can also get it recorded. Like that's just a thing that's recorded.
No, like there's another podcast I listen to sometimes. There's only been like four episodes of it, but it's Michael Ian Black and Tom Cavanaugh, and it's called Mike and Tom Eat Snacks.
What do they do?
They eat snacks.
Okay.
And they talk about snacks.
All right.
Each episode, they talk about some things. Then they unveil a snack.
They're just lifting our material.
Eat the snack and discuss this. Yeah. Like the most recent episode, it was all about Slim Jims.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
All right, then. Good for them. But yeah, so that's not the sort of thing that needs to be done. There's really no call to do that live. I would say the...
No, not really.
I would say the practical effect as a listener is probably the same.
Yeah.
But people are not necessarily aware that we actually do the show live every day, just as though it were a regular radio program. And indeed we do. So greetings to listener David, who is homesick today.
It helps keep us all fresh and on our toes.
That's right.
And that sort part of that.
Well, that's right, because, you know, look, if you can't do it live, you can't really do it, kids. It is the Rick Emerson radio program. Thank you for joining us. Coming up today, we got your religious nutcase watch. We got your snuff watch coming up today. I didn't even, and this is again where, I mean, it's not like I didn't read the news this morning, but somebody died and I wasn't aware who it was. Is it significant, notable?
Well, I had this prepared
for yesterday.
Yesterday.
Oh, see, but so that's 2 days.
No.
Well, we'll talk about yesterday in a second because it's notable then that it's 2 days worth of news. Because I read the news yesterday and I didn't see who died.
Apparently you missed it.
Well, now I'm intrigued. Male or female?
Male.
Over the age of 60?
Yes.
Entertainer?
Yes.
Just making this up. Nobody's dead. You're just fabricating this.
Somebody's dead.
All right. Well, we'll talk about that, I guess, when we get to it. So we got the snuff watch coming up, religious nutcase watch on the way. We will also talk to Mr. Big Jim Willig. He'll be in the studio with another installment of Humor Me Comedy 101. Today he'll be talking about the life, work, and legacy of Miss Gilda Radner, who I believe... Now, I guess we've focused on comedians, but we had a Margaret Cho. So this will be this is the second one we were focused on. It'll be Gilda Radner.
No, we also talked about Joan Rivers.
That's right. Okay. So there you go. Well, see, I should have known that, Jim. It's a big tent where he lives.
Yeah.
He's inclusive. He's a people of, he's a man of the people. You know, all people of all faiths and creeds can find a home in Big Jim Willig.
Yes.
So to speak.
I
don't know what that means. In his near his uvula. And Don Taylor is tracking the following headlines for you on this Friday.
Doctors remove a knife from a man's head after 4 years. A daycare gives a grandfather the wrong child.
Dope.
And a friend of Sam Kinison says that he fathered a child.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
So this is going to be like a Baby Sam cartoon or something coming out at any moment?
Maybe.
Awesome. All right. Plus, we'll have clues number 4 and 5 for today's Name That Snack contest, courtesy of EH Vending. We do one clue every day, typically. And then on Friday, we give you clue number 5. Once clue number 5 is given out, the first person who correctly identifies the snack of the week via snack@rickemerson.com. That is snack@rickemerson.com. You score yourself a bag full of consumable goodness from the fine folks at EH Vending. So because we were gone yesterday, we will actually do both clues today. So we will do the Thursday clue and the Friday clue today. So, in fact, we'll do the Thursday clue here in just a second. And keep in mind, again, once we give out this clue, you still got one more. You got to wait for the actual final clue, which will come up in the 2 o'clock hour today. So that is coming up here in just a few, courtesy of EH Vending.
This is why David is really home. He's not actually sick. He wants to be...
wants to be able to strike.
Be ready to strike.
As soon as the moment is ready.
Yes.
We should also, and we'll have to cram this in at some point, we should also just real briefly touch on Wednesday night's episode of Justified, for which I still don't have a music bed.
Huh.
You had that panicked look on your face just now like you haven't watched it.
I didn't watch it.
Really?
Yeah.
How is that possible?
I don't know.
You had a whole extra day in which you could have watched it.
I know. I got...
We talked to Joelle Carter. She was really nice and thanked us on Twitter.
I know.
You're a failure, Don. You're bringing shame on our house.
Wow.
Okay, never mind. All that stuff I just said, probably not going to happen.
Wow, I failed.
I will tell you this.
I knew I was missing something. I knew there was something that wasn't getting done. And honestly, yeah, that must have been it.
Well, I will tell you this. I won't give any spoilers or anything. But in fact, I will give you spoilers that there are no spoilers. In other words, it is not. I mean, we're only 2 episodes in. So it's not like there was nothing... I don't want to call it a Monster of the Week episode, but it was sort of like that, where there was because there's always the overarching or overarching, whichever it is, storyline. And then each week, there's a little incremental developments or stories that are just contained within that one episode, like a lot of shows. This was where, unless there's something I'm not seeing or don't know, this was largely about a one-week story arc. And then they did some Walt and Goggins stuff. But it's not like there was something really crucial that happened. It was good, but it was kind of a standalone episode. We'll get to that.
I just feel sort of, I'm disappointed in myself because I've been catching up on things like Hellcats, and yet I missed Justified.
Well, Hellcats isn't going to watch itself, Don. I mean, it's not like it's just going to beam itself into your brain. By the way, have I told you I've decided what my new series is going to be that I watch?
No.
I almost hesitate to say it out loud because it's like the whole business of picking an iPhone or an Android phone, where it's like no matter what I say, I'm going to irritate half the people. Everybody who rooted for me to, do something else, it's like they're going to be annoyed at me. So I've decided that the next, because I'm caught up on Justified, obviously, caught up on, I'm caught up on House altogether. There was something else that I was power loading. There's something else I was watching a lot of. But I'm caught up on everything that I was watching. I've got some stuff that I haven't begun yet, but mostly those are like British shows. Yeah. You know, it's like, what is it, the Jekyll or something? It's like only like six episodes.
Yeah.
Luther, I'm caught up on. That was only six episodes.
Secret Diary of a Call Girl.
You know, well, there's that. Here's the thing. I might actually watch that show because...
I really like it. I've watched. I'm actually catching up on the current season. I think it's season four now.
Here's the thing about Secret Diary of a Call Girl is, I think like a lot of guys, I had never really heard about the show or the book until they revealed her identity last year. And then once her identity came out, I read the whole saga. She was smart and funny. I mean, in real life and everything, she seemed like a pretty interesting figure. And then I found that it was a whole deal, especially in Britain, and that women especially, that at some point it had like some huge, like a 70 share or whatever of women watching it. So it actually looks like kind of an intriguing program.
It's really fun and very, very entertaining. And I love that actress. She was the first companion on when they brought Doctor Who back, which is like the only season of Doctor Who I've ever watched. So, and she was really great. And she's just adorable. But, she's playing a call girl, and she's just delightful.
And, yeah, so it's such a great story in real life that I feel like I want to watch that. The other thing is that I got to get some stuff watched before Breaking Bad returns, because that's going to take up my Wednesday. So right now, it's like Monday, House, Wednesday, Justified. But soon it's going to be Wednesday, Justified, and Breaking Bad, which means Wednesday is going to be like Sunday used to be, where it was like goddamn Dexter and Californication and goddamn Mad Men and goddamn Walking Dead. So it was like my whole Sunday was just not sleeping, basically. And then I always had Outlook Portland the next morning, just had to be up at like 6:30. So it was just like Sunday and the Monday was always just hell. So Wednesday is going to, it's going to be somewhat like that. So I'll say it now before I forget, and then we'll move on. So my new program that I watch, I'm going to, and I almost hesitate to say it because it's going to uncork a whole discussion probably. I'm going to watch Fringe, which I, to my shame and horror, have never seen.
Fringe suffers from a lot of the same weaknesses that Abrams' other series have.
Like starts good, ends bad.
Like Alias in particular. I wouldn't say it ends bad, but it is kind of unspooling in such a complicated fashion that every once in a while I do start to worry that it's getting kind of dumb. And there are some things in it that are just cringe-inducingly dumb, but I like it and I like the characters so much that I keep watching it every single week.
Well, I pulled the ripcord early on Lost because I sensed that I was about to be the victim of just an elaborate gag on behalf of ABC, and I wasn't going to be part of that. I will say, having watched Alias, the thing about Alias is that there was, I don't want to call it camp, but the show had a sense of fun that I would swallow things I would never swallow on another show. I remember the first time on Alias when I watched it. I mean, it wasn't the first episode, but I remember watching Alias, and the first time that show literally did the whole, like, no, 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 I'm really wearing a mask of someone else. And I just said, like, are you effing kidding me? Someone just was wearing, like, it was like a full-on Scooby-Doo moment. Where, what's her name? It was wearing, like, a Lauren. It was when Vaughn was married to the British chick. And Sydney, like, is wearing a mask, and it's like of the British girl. I'm like, are you really expecting me to believe that she was wearing a convincing mask of someone else's face? Are you effing with me? But the show got away with it because you could tell that they just embraced the fact that it was so I won't even say corny, it was just so over the top.
Well, with Fringe, it's science fiction. And since it's all supposed to be like crazy, crazy science that is beyond the realm of very X-Files-ish.
Right.
Things that you just wouldn't expect to happen. So that then it can be over the top. But the thing is, and I'm not really spoiling anything here, it's just this is something that's been driving me crazy. A big, huge part of the storyline becomes the fact that there are parallel dimensions, and everybody exists in parallel dimensions.
Right.
And of course, at some point, they become aware of each other, and they pass over, and somebody's in this side, and somebody's in the outside. So, and the two of the main characters, there's the older scientist, and his name is Walter, and the FBI agent, her name is Olivia. And it's one thing for fans of shows on message boards to give cute names to characters
right.
when they're talking about it amongst themselves. It's another thing for a show to give cute names to their characters that the characters themselves
use. Please, to give an example.
Well, it would be the people on this side in, quote, our reality, referring to Walter on the other dimension as Walternet.
No.
And then when, and it's like if somebody says that once, like the Peter character, who's right. like Pacey on Dawson's Creek. If he says it's kind of funny, but then they keep using
they
it.
They keep doing it.
And I think that they do it as a method of helping to keep, you know, within the dialogue.
So you can keep it straight.
So you keep it straight who they're talking about. They don't have to keep saying, you know, the Walter over on the other side. It's shorthand.
Right.
But it's really annoying. And not only is that really annoying, but only recently they've also started calling the alternate reality Olivia Folivia.
Okay, I shouldn't have laughed at that.
And it just makes me crazy.
You know, there's a lot. I'm trying to think if there's another show that did that recently where they started using what sounded very much like. I wondered if it was like a nod to the internet, you know, fans. If it was a nod to the online community for the show. Well, you know, it's like on Buffy when they themselves started calling themselves the Scooby Gang.
Yeah, I was gonna say I blame Whedon for all of this like adorable, like meta adorableness on TV shows.
When the Buffy characters started to call themselves the Scooby Gang, which is the thing that started on the net, that bugged me a little bit because I don't know why, and it sounds like a stupid thing to be bugged by, but it did. It sort of annoyed me because it did seem overly self-referential.
Well, it's my thing that, you know, it's one thing for people to call McDonald's Mickey D's.
Yeah.
But then when McDonald's starts calling itself Mickey D's, you just want to punch McDonald's in the head.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I'm with you on that. So, all right. So it's been on for like several seasons though, Fringe, right? It's been on, I mean, what were like season 3, 4,
something like that? Yeah, 4.
So, you know, so I'll watch it. Seamus made a really strong, compelling argument for watching
it. It's definitely worth catching up on. It's very entertaining.
Well, and I feel like my peeps are watching it, as they say, Don. So, it's just that I feel like it is one of those shows that where there is this chasm slowly widening between me and most of the people I know, because there are, if you were to look at a Venn diagram of me and like the people in my social circle, there are one or two shows where there are the most points of overlap, and that's one of them. So I feel like I probably, you know, like that's a, you know, that's a thing I probably should watch because most of the people I know are watching it.
So if we're here on this side of the table, I assume then I should probably like power load all of Breaking Bad so that I can talk to you about it when it comes back.
Well, yes, A, for the love of the show, because we're going to be talking about it here, at least I'd like to, and also because it's goddamned amazing. And it seems like a lot, you know, you and I recently over the last, I mean, and probably most people over the last few years, find ourselves saying something a lot like, it's the best blank whatever, or it's the best blank that I've ever seen. And I don't think that's because I try not to think that I just have like some sort of, you know, ooh, bright, shiny object sort of a thing, where whatever I just saw, I try not to think that I have the Harry Knowles thing, where the movie I just saw is the best movie I've ever seen in my entire life because it was the last movie I just saw. You know, that whatever the most recent thing was, that's the best that's ever, there's never been anything better than the thing I just saw yesterday until the other thing that replaces it in my head. I try to think that I have a long view of things, you know, in terms of popular culture, that I can look at television, for example, for the last, you know, 40 years, and to whatever extent I've seen it, to try to make some rational assessment. But, I mean, I think it's fair to say that television now, generally speaking, is just way better than television was 50 years ago.
Oh, yeah.
You watch even a bad sitcom now. You watch your average sitcom, and you watch an average sitcom from the 50s, and writing on television has just gotten better. I'm not saying there weren't clunkers then and that everything's genius now, or there weren't good shows then and everything, you know, is. But it's just that they've learned to avoid a lot of the cliche, and I think the batting average has improved. So that's when I say something like that I think The Shield had, for me, probably the most satisfying finale. I don't know that it's the best ever, but I'm hard-pressed to think of a finale. You know, unless you go back to, I mean, there's like the St. Elsewhere finale, which was really good. And then people, the Newhart finale, people talk about that. And that was good, I guess. But even those are relatively recent. I mean, you know, I think that we are in sort of a new golden age of television. I will tell you this. I'm not going to say that Breaking Bad is the best show on TV, because I will say that for my money, that is still The Wire. But Breaking Bad is like, especially the second season, I would put the second season of Breaking Bad up against anything I have ever seen on television, including The Wire. I mean, I would say that the second season of Breaking Bad, pound for pound, I would say it is better than, it is as good as anything I have ever seen, and it is better than almost everything I have seen on television in my years on this planet. It's really, really good. So, again, you know, watch it, don't watch it. It's a bleak show. I mean, it's dark. You're not going to end the show going like, I feel so great about life. The only thing you will feel good about is that you don't have cancer and that you're not on the run from the cops for dealing meth. I mean, that's kind of it.
I usually feel pretty good about that anyway.
Yeah, well, I mean, so, you know, maybe it's obviated. Maybe you're already taken care of. So we got the headlines coming up. Let's see. Big Jim will be in the studio. I talked about the cranky stuff. Yesterday, so thank you and apologies and patience. No, apologies for patience. Thank you for another thing.
Are you thanking them for being patient yesterday?
That's what I was trying to do. What I was doing, it was just speaking a bunch of gibberish.
Yeah.
So my aim and my execution, two different things just there. So thanks to everybody who was patient, listened to a best of yesterday, which I think was good in its own right. I think there was some quality to be had there. So thank you for that. That was not like an intended absence. And I also should say, this is the reason, one of the reasons I hate missing shows is because it violates my sense of Puritan work ethic that I have. And also because I just get to live, there's like the Catholic guilt where I just sit around and I just I look at the clock. And for every moment that I'm not here that I feel like I ought to be, then I just feel like a terrible, horrible, loathsome excuse for a man. Also, because then people just start to speculate about something. And because we don't do a lot of days off in the show, and I'm not saying we don't ever take time off,
yeah,
but we don't do a lot of days off, and we, you know, and we never really have, you know, like Howard, you know, it would just take like 5 and 6 weeks off at a time, it seemed like. I mean, we just don't really do that. And so whenever we're gone, especially without warning, people somehow assume like the worst. And I saw that there were some people on the message board saying, oh, I'm just really worried that something is... So like I said, nothing bad happened, this disaster didn't befall. It really is just... It's just dumb. It's just one of those days where I woke up and you asked if I was, how did you phrase it? You asked if I was quote really sick, which I take to mean not really sick as in extremely sick, but really sick as opposed to going and doing Navy SEAL training undercover.
Something, because I was concerned because you sent me an email saying
don't come in,
no show. Everything be back normal Friday. Bye. So I texted back and I was like, why? What's up? Are you okay? And you never texted me back. So then I texted you again later, like a few hours later, and said, well, if you need anything, if anything, you know, want anything, and I never heard back. So I emailed Cheryl and Cheryl goes, I haven't talked to him. I'll let you know. And then later she sends me a text and all it says is, he says to tell you he's not feeling well. And so I'm like going, well, okay then. And then I immediately start going, he said to tell you he's not
the story
well.
I've been given.
Is that Cheryl's way of saying, I'm not going to lie for him?
The cover tale is...
I'm going to say, he said to tell you, because then I'm not actually lying. And so then I'm just like, is he just not speaking to me? Is he angry? Is he so angry at me he just won't go to work today?
The message that I've
what
been given...
What did I do? What did I do that would make him that angry?
So like Cheryl is like... So Cheryl's like, what's his name? Cheryl's like Robert Patrick Leonard in Swing Kids, where she shows up with a box of ashes. You are to have this. Well, what is it? You are to have this. Is it my husband's ashes with a wedding ring inside a cigar box because the Nazis killed him and burned him up? You are to have this. And then he just leaves it and runs away.
Exactly.
And then, to add, not insult to injury, but to compound or whatever. So then yesterday, because of something totally unrelated, so my email totally went down. Because the text, like, I was just asleep. I was asleep when you sent that. And then I answered the one, because you sent one last night. And I said, oh, you know, I'm alive and awake and around. You know, I'll see you tomorrow, whatever. Because my email had totally and completely crashed. In fact, so did yours, so did Cheryl's. Everything that ended in rickemerson.com, whether it was, like, the Cheryl at rickemerson.com or Dawn at Rick, they all went down, I swear to God, because of something a guy did in Melbourne, Australia. I put a little photo up on my website. Because I have a premium account from Yahoo. Fat lot of friggin' good it does me.
Gmail.
So I go, well, see, and I was talking to Thomas about that this morning, and I was saying that I would have used Gmail, except I've mentioned the fact that the guy who has Rick Emerson at Gmail won't sell it to me. And so now it's like a point of principle. And plus, all of my crap is hosted at Yahoo. And it's like, I actually had I had a long conversation with Thomas this morning, because Yahoo has been... they've not only handled my email, they've been my hosting provider. They hold all my sites are registered. All my sites live. They all live on Yahoo servers. And it's not like it would be hard to change that stuff. It would just be one of those things that, like, it would just be logistically, it just makes me tired to think about it, because all of my crap is hosted in Yahoo. And it's like, ugh, do I really want to spend 9 hours with customer service on the phone trying to get all my crap transferred over? And so I just haven't done it. But literally, so I was plugged into Yahoo, like, trying to figure out the deal with my email, because Bruce is like, he texts me, he's like, hey, so none of the rickemerson.com addresses are working. What is up with that? So I go to Yahoo, and it says, there's this thing where you can log in, and you press a button saying, call me as soon as the next operator is available. So you don't, to their credit, you don't have to stay on hold.
And I did see your post about that on the
666 minutes. Because you press the thing and normally it'll like, an operator will call you in 2 minutes, which is actually really great because you don't have to wait on hold. You hang up the phone, they've got your number on file, and it's like they will call you as soon as somebody's ready. And I press the thing and I swear to God, it says, we will call you in 666 minutes, which is a little unnerving. Not just because, you know, it's the number of the beast, because that's like 6 hours. And so then I get a thing from them saying, we're sorry, we're experiencing a service outage in Melbourne, Australia, which has resulted in, apparently I got off light, because people who were hosted through Yahoo sent out this message. They said, so you may be experiencing difficulty in sending and receiving email. And then I swear to God, they also said, also, sites that are hosted on Yahoo, users may discover if they type in the name for that address or click on a link, they may be routed to another site altogether. So you, like, it could have been worse. Like, you could have written in, like, rickemerson.com in your address bar, your browser, and gone to just, like, humpholes.com or, you know, meatshaft.com or something.
Yes, because I'm sure that's exactly where it would immediately
go. How would I have known? And then, God forbid, with people from humpholes, who knows where they're going to go? So, anyway, so, yeah, so then the email goes down. So then I've started getting, like, messages on the Facebook thing from people like, well, there's no show today, and all of his email addresses have been turned off. The last time this happened, like about 2 years ago, I had I don't forget what it was. I was like sick or I was something or other. But I was gone unexpectedly a couple years ago. And I swear to God, that was the same day that I had some other problem. There was some problem with like Comcast or something, but like my website was just gone. That same day. It's like the universe just lines it up. So people are like panicking and freaking out or whatever. Anyway, so that all happened. So I'm like posting the thing saying like, here's the deal. But yesterday I had just gotten up. And it was one of those days where you asked me if I was sick. And the reason I brought that up is because you know, there's been like a cold and flu thing going on. Like Sarah and Greg had it, where like Greg's voice was totally gone. You know, my wife had the thing of like where she had the scratchy, like, you know, scrapey throat going on. I think Sarah had, although I think that was food poisoning a few weeks ago, but she's had the hoarseness.
Yeah.
I don't know if you haven't. I mean, there's people like having the whole weird. And I have not had any of that. I haven't had like any of the throat problems. I haven't been like hacking. I haven't any sneezing or whatever. But what happened yesterday is I woke up and it was like I just, it was, I think as we described you being this way last week at one point, that all of your thoughts were encased in a sort of gelatin-like mass inside your head where you could see your thoughts as though they were through thick plexiglass, but you couldn't actually reach them or touch them. I actually walked twice yesterday, and this is not code for anything, just twice yesterday, I literally walked into doors. I would actually, and this is not like right out of bed. This is like I'm up and around and presumably awake, where I would open doors and literally go, well, I guess I'll walk into the kitchen, and just into the door frame. And then like, you know, and then you immediately look around, even though no one is home, to see if anyone saw you. And of course the dog saw me and left.
Yeah.
And then like, you know, like an hour later, well, now that I'm in the kitchen, I guess I'll walk to the home office, into a door frame. Later I found myself sitting in my chair, and I was going to put on my typing boots, and my typing boots are called that because they have to be the right height because otherwise typing on the, I get a lumbar thing typing on my keyboard. So I go to put on my typing boots and I sat there. I have no idea how long it was. I sat there for 5 minutes probably staring at my shoes because I couldn't quite figure out what was supposed to come next. And just looking at them going, well, I guess I'm lacing them. And then, like, moments went by, and then later on that day, it was sort of a, the rabbit goes around the stump, the rat goes in the hole. How do I tie these? And, of course, there's no one to ask, because the dogs are no help when it comes to opposable thumb-oriented skills. So there was that. There was this email that I had to tell, this is later on, but there was an email that I had to send yesterday afternoon of, like, I don't know, two sentences to somebody. This is why it was the wise choice for me not to get. I mean, I guess you can make the argument that the show would have been really interesting and entertaining. But there was this email that I had to send to somebody yesterday afternoon, and I sat there, and you may have had these moments in your life where the email is two sentences long. No exaggeration, I think it probably took me 20 minutes to get the email composed and to where I felt confident pressing the send button because I was so desperately afraid that I had somehow written it wrong or, like, used somebody else's name or, like, inadvertently said, like, and go to hell and die, you know, like, for no reason. Like, I would read the email, and I would read it aloud, and thank God that there was nobody around, but I'm reading the email out loud to myself, trying to make sure that it makes sense. For a while, I actually entertained the possibility that there was some sort of, a carbon monoxide leak in my house, which, the only reason I don't think that was the case is because, like, the dog seemed fine, wife seemed fine, Nobody else on the block dead or anything. So it was just something inside my head. And I just made the... And I really just almost... It causes me near physical pain to not come to work and not do the show because I just feel terrible on so many levels. But I just reached some point of demarcation where I was like, this is not going to work. Like, it is going to end badly, like, for everyone if I sit behind the microphone and try to do a show today. And I don't know if it's just, like, collective exhaustion or whatever, you know, because it's not like I'm working at a salt mine when I'm not here, you know? It's not like I'm having to go off and do a decathlon or something. But, you know, I just think my sleeping schedule's been off and whatever. So it's like, I don't know if it's just a collective sort of, like an aggregate sleep loss, a sleep deficit, as they say, is something. But my brain was clearly not making connection with anything. And then it's like that thing where it's like you go to sleep and you reset and everything seems to be working fine.
Okay.
So anyway, so there you go. Well, I had some other stuff to write down, but we should, let's take a break here. We'll come back on the other side. We'll get some news. We got Big Jim Willie coming in. The reason, by the way, that I want to try to stay on schedule today and maybe get out of here, not necessarily. I guess it's the same time we would normally get out of here because Sarah and Greg come in at 3:30, is because as opposed to taping their show in the afternoon, normally on Fridays we try to be, and we run over sometimes, and I always feel bad about that too. Normally we try to be out by 3:30 on Fridays because... Sarah and Greg are taping, and I want to, you know, and we have this sort of agreement with them that we'll be done, and sometimes we're late, then I feel like a jackass. Today, as opposed to taping Fun Employment Radio, Sarah and Greg are going to be broadcasting their new show, which is Sportlandia. And you can watch it live, by the way, at trailblazers.tv. That is all one word. Trailblazers.tv, a subset of NBA.com, which is awesome. But they're going to be broadcasting the show, but they're actually going to be broadcasting it live from a venue in Portland. They're going to be at Spirit of 76, which is on Northeast MLK. So they're going to be doing that today at 4 p.m. And so I'm going to go and watch them do this. I'm going to be in attendance at the premiere episode of their brand new show, which is Sportlandia, happening at 4 p.m. at trailblazers.tv, but broadcasting live from Spirit of 76 right here in Portland, Oregon. So that is not too far from here, but I want to make sure that we get there on time. Because the you know, the joint will be hopping, as they say. So anyway, so that's coming up. Plus, I'll open this big box of Cranky. Ooh, and you brought me, Dawn, you brought me as a... And it says, by the way, it just speaks... like volumes about us that this is your idea of a get well present. You brought me a Kit Kat bar.
Yeah.
But it's not just any Kit Kat bar, it's dark chocolate. So, and I retorted that I had actually said, I said, thank you, that'll go well with the dark chocolate Snickers bar, which I had this morning, like for no reason. Because that's what you want to have if your brain has gone a little wonky. You want to have more chocolate.
Well, we were eating the peanut butter Snickers bar.
That's right.
Last week, a few days ago, and I had that thing where I was going, and there's some kind of a dark chocolate candy bar that I saw recently, and I can't remember what it is. And then when I went to buy my Vizo, I realized that's where I see it. He's got them on the counter at the place where I buy the Vizo. And I was like, aha, dark chocolate Kit Kat bar. And so I bought that for you.
Excellent. Well, I have a little something for you when we come back. Yeah, go. So that's straight ahead. It is the Rick Emerson radio program. It's 503-505-6964. You can also email if you like. It's rick@rickemerson.com. Dawn, D-A-W-N @rickemerson.com. Email is back up and running again, by the way. Let's see. And text box open on the website. You can also contact us via Skype if you like. That is all one word. That's Rick Emerson Show via Skype. That is Rick Emerson Show. Via Skype. So straight ahead, Big Jim Willig will join us. We'll have the news. Coming up later on, we got your Snuff Watch, Religious Nutcase Watch, Clues 4 and 5. Oh, I promised to give Clue 4 before we actually went to a break. All right, so here is Clue number 4. Again, this is not the final clue. Seriously, listen up now. This is not the final clue. The final clue will come in about, 45 minutes. This is the second to last clue. This is Thursday's clue.
So take this into consideration, but don't answer yet.
That's right. You got to wait until the final clue before you send your answer, or it'll be disregarded. When you do get the final clue next hour, or, you know, I guess later on this hour, about 45 minutes from now, you can answer at snack@rickemerson.com.
The penultimate clue
is sailor. Sailor. That was the second to final clue. There you go. Awesome. We'll be back after this. It is the Rick Emerson radio program. Go nowhere. We return momentarily.
You're listening to the Emerson News Network.
Well, I'm a wasted rock ranger. But
ears are blown, my eyes are red. I got big holes inside my head. Snorting too much crystal and cocaine. I have Benny's with the breakfast toast. Quaaludes with the evening roast. Assorted snorts of powder in between. I don't think the days gone by that I wasn't drunk or high. It's the only way I keep my sanity. From Kegger's Den to Hootersville, my flaming drinks have topped the bill. A thousand empty bottles earn my name. Endless strings of one-night stands, sharing stage with half-assed bands, and all the local groupies lay the same. Well, I coulda had a paying job, working for some f***ed up slob. Wife of family, true security. But I left that s*** behind. All that heavy metal grind. This rock and roll is in my blood to stay among other things. Hey, you're a wasted rock ranger. You'll live a life of danger. Sing this song and follow it till the end. When you reach number one, you can overdose for fun and go and visit Jimmy and his friends.
You're listening to the Emerson News Network.
It is the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Thank you for joining us. 503-505-6964. It is Friday. Don't forget to join us next week when our guests will include...
Burt Lancaster.
No. No. Well, I mean, I guess he's powerless to stop us at this point, but... No, Mr. Seth Aaron.
Oh, that's right.
From Project Runway, a designer based in Vancouver and winner of Season 7 Project Runway, is going to be in the studio next week to do his top five. We're doing the top five songs that he listens to while working, while designing, while creating, as Kiff would say. Also in the studio next week, Mr. Bill Carter, author of Fools Rush In and the new book, the book that he's currently promoting, Red Summer.
And he's dreamy.
He really is.
Have you met him?
No.
I forget. Yeah, he is. He really is pretty. He is pretty dreamy.
Has Laura met him yet?
No.
Nor shall she. Unfortunately, she's working that day.
Oh,
darn the luck.
That's
it's
too
almost.
Bad.
It's almost like his appearance was scheduled to coordinate with her, you know, to coincide with her actually being gone and unavailable.
You should invite him over for dinner or something while he's in town.
I don't think it's going to happen, Don.
Come hang out with you and the wife.
I think I may forget to do that.
I'm sure she'd love to meet him.
I'm sure she would. It's the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Thank you for joining us. It's welcome now to the Rick Emerson Program. Our good friend, Mr. Big Jim Willig. Hello, sir.
Hello. How you doing?
I am. I'm fine. What is it you were? Were you slaying something on your computer screen? Were you vanquishing evil of?
No, I have a, I'm not ashamed to say, I have a full-blown addiction to the angry video game nerd, James Rolfe, and his dismantling of all my favorite Nintendo, Sega, and various other video games in his rage and alcohol-fueled rhetoric.
So is that what you were watching just now as I walked in?
Yes. Okay. Yeah, I was finishing up his take on Bart versus the Space Mutants and Bart versus the World.
Ah, see, I couldn't quite tell. I think Jim is vanquishing elves or orcs or something.
So. Well, what's funny is the first one he was reviewing, Bart versus the Space Mutants, I had that for my original Nintendo and was playing it on a black and white TV. Now, if you remember the game, the very first level is you're supposed to spray paint or cover purple objects. Now, can you imagine how long I was playing that game before I could get it on? Yeah, it was very long.
A black and white television for your Nintendo?
Yeah.
That's a weird sort of mixed bag of a household. What was going on there?
We were like a baby step above, like, just, you know, off the grid living people.
But, like, I mean, how is it that you had, in other words, it's not even really about the money. I'm asking where, like, the priorities there just seem, the timeline is wrong. It's just.
Well, my mom had gotten me a Nintendo, and the TV that we finally got in a color TV when I was, you know, probably in about, like, junior high, almost high
right.
school. So the old 17-inch black and white 400-pound Zenith. With a handle on top, I got to lug up to my room and find a way to sort of get, like, the circuit breaker switch.
Were you
flip.
Not allowed to have the Nintendo hooked to the family's main television?
Absolutely not. No, I lived in a gynocracy, so there was nothing but women kind of controlling the. I had to wait for all the women to be asleep in the household before I could actually watch something that I would enjoy watching. So,
basically, living underneath a staircase.
Yeah, I watched a lot of. Chick flicks, like
things starring Candace Bergen.
Oh my God, yeah. So yeah. Lifetime, not entertainment for women, entertainment that hates men.
Yeah, it's
you only watch Valerie Bertinelli be upset about things so much.
Yeah,
you know?
I mean, is it because I want the black and white television is like you want to talk about a thing that was an absolute benchmark. I mean, it was really a litmus test.
Oh yeah,
it was like luminol for trashiness, where it's like you just go in the house and you go, oh, look what we got here, black and white television. They're hicks, Bob.
You could feel the radiation seeping into your skin and face.
The other thing that you could feel seeping in was – so like we had the black and white TV, which I always – for some reason – and I had a black and white TV someone did not turn his cell phone off.
Just wow. Now. Clown shoes. Thank you, girlfriend.
Okay. Is your girlfriend in charge of turning the ringer off on your phone?
Yes, obviously.
As well as many, many other tasks.
I just got a cell phone with a color screen on it, for God's sake.
but I remember, I mean, I had a black and white TV for a long time, and, you know, which I guess because when did black and white televisions really, for the most part, get phased out? When did that start becoming uncommon?
'70s? I thought all the way into the '70s.
Really?
Yeah, late 70s, maybe early 80s.
Well, now I am embarrassed because I was thinking, like, I don't know, 89, something like that?
No. We were the last to get really a color TV of the friends that I knew.
Yeah, I mean, I had a black and white television up. I mean, I know, speaking just for myself, and this wasn't the family. We had, you know, like you, we had one in the living room that was, you know, that was Dad's, so he could watch, you know, so he could watch Chuck Knox just continue to blow plays every Sunday. But in my television, in my room, I had a black and white television until, I don't know, probably, I mean, it probably was 88 or 89. But for some reason, when I think back to my room and I picture myself watching television, I am always watching It's Your Move with Jason Bateman.
Dude,
I don't know why.
Yes, I love that show.
But that's the thing I always, it's, you know what it is? It's like how in old sitcoms, every time Dad's watching TV, it's Cowboys and Indians.
Yeah.
In my head, every time I picture myself as a youth watching TV, it's always It's Your Move.
Well, I think I'm thinking about the black and white TV thing, and I think for a long time, I think they phased out black and white in the bigger, more expensive TVs, but you could still get like cheap, small black and white TVs for a really, really long time. Because I remember, yeah, I was in high school and I had like a portable TV.
You know, yeah.
It has like what, like a 13-inch screen or something like that?
Because they had a handle on it.
Yeah, it had a
Therefore,
handle on the top.
Therefore, it's portable. It weighs 1,000 pounds,
right.
But it's got a handle.
And knowing my dad, it probably came from Radio Shack. And
yeah.
So, you know.
Yeah, I think
it had antennas. It had actual rabbit ear antennas attached to the top of it.
Yeah.
I think once the digital remote control TV started coming out more and more, that was really the absolute postmortem for the black and white TVs. But, you know, my mom didn't get a microwave until like the mid-90s, and even it still had dials on the front. So it wasn't so much a microwave as it was just sort of like a, I don't know.
A radiation machine?
Pretty much, yeah.
Saturator. I wasn't really supposed to watch probably as much television as I did. But of course, then as now, television, my only true friend. And so I would just watch it late into the night with the aid of this thing that you kids have never had to deal with. Although there probably is some equivalent to the way you listen to your iPod now, where there was just this single, like there was this little jack on the side where you wouldn't put in headphones. because it was mono. It was a single long white cord that went into a plug you jammed into one ear.
And that was your good ear.
Really, and it looked like a thing that you would use to stop up the drain in a really small sink. But you would jam it into your ear, and then it would go into the television. And so, of course, it would become all enwaxened over the course of, you know, however long. And then you're sitting there with a toothpick trying to get the wax out of the little listening hole part of it.
Oh, God,
you know, like, it's true. Never did it. You jam things into your ears now, like today, sitting across the room from me.
There's like missing pen. You're like Mrs. Poole from Ferris Bueller's Day Off. You just keep pulling pens out like a weird magic trick.
They're inside her cochlear canal, though.
Earwax disturbs me.
Well,
it's one of those things that I find disturbing.
No, I'm just saying, because you do spend a lot of time scraping the inside of your ears. I watch it from over here, sister. Don't tell me it's not true.
The lovely ball you're collecting,
too. The headphones make my ears itch.
I'm not...
I reach up and I scratch my ears.
I'm not judging.
Some mites.
I'm not passing judgment. I'm just saying, look, everybody poops, everybody waxes. But you...
in that order.
So you would just have this one thing. It's like Liv Taylor has in That Thing You Do when she's listening to the transistor radio and licking stamps. And that's what I would use to watch television on this tiny little black and white TV and watching It's Your Move with Jason Bateman.
Yeah. And there was nothing comfortable about it either. There wasn't like any like nice little foam padding on it. It was hard plastic. It was one size fits none. And you're right. And basically what happens is you get a headache because your only one ear is being fed this audio. So you have to like pull it out and kind of balance between the two until the migraine got so bad you had to turn the TV off and sit in a dark room.
And, you know, it's made out of a piece of hard molded plastic that doesn't fit anyone's ear, as you just said. And so you're thinking, like, there must be a better system for this. There must be a softer, more rounded earplug that I can do. But then it took, I swear to God, until like 2009 to create that way, like those silicone earbuds.
Like these.
Yeah, because it's like, because even then, but goddamn iPhone, which I think, you know, you could calculate moon landings with it, and yet they're still giving you the freaking things that are all hard plastic so that you fork over $30 for like the skull candy ones or something.
Yeah, it's like, because I get the thing like, and then you're trying to jam Mentos in your ears.
Yeah, it's good.
I'm still getting over the It's Your Move reference. I thought I was like one of like four people.
Oh, no, I love that show.
I could go on and on about that show.
I don't know how well it holds up. Probably not very well because I would be comparing it to things now, which is when people say it doesn't really hold up. It doesn't date all that well. That's because they're always comparing it to whatever's on TV, the contemporary programs. If you were to go back and look at It's Your Move in the context of other 80s sitcoms, especially from NBC, which was just like a mill for crap at that point, where they just churned out one bad show after another, It's Your Move was actually not bad, largely because of the acting ability of Jason Bateman, who even then was really, really good.
Yeah, if you are a fan in any way of Arrested Development, you need to go back and do your homework and watch that.
And I think the other male lead on It's Your Move was the guy who then played Marcy's husband on Married with Children. But I could be wrong. Not Ted McGinley.
I was going to say the Kiss of Death, Ted McGinley.
No, not Ted McGinley. No, because the show wouldn't have been on the air.
Harbinger
of Death. It would have been gone, baby. But the guy, you know what I'm talking about? He was kind of a nebbish, kind of a tall, skinny guy.
Kind of like a Flanders minus the mustache.
Yeah. Kind of big nose, black hair, that guy. So he, I think, was the male lead on It's Your Move, and he lived across the hall from Jason Bateman and his hot sister.
That show was really the way it, I can remember the entrance music and the theme, and that was one of the reasons why I wanted to be an entertainer. I wanted to get into TV. I wanted to have my own It's Your Move kind of TV show.
All I remember, the episode to me that always comes to mind in It's Your Move, and I remember the opening,
Skeletons.
Like the, get out.
Yes!
You're in my head, dude. All right, we got to, you're freaking me out. All right, that's a little strange.
We're all silence. Don't know what. There's got to be some kind of way out of here.
I know this because Tyler and Jim know this. Jesus. Just, okay, look away. Don't look at me anymore. Sir, don't make eye contact.
And now, from the news desk, this is Dawn Taylor.
Oh, God, and I just looked, okay, I just made the mistake of looking at the screen and like three other people said the same thing, like at the same time. Okay, I'm not even, okay, I'm closing all of these. Look, okay. All right. Hello, Don.
Hi. Why am I so echoey?
Because this I came in this morning, and so this is I think because that is where Sarah sits, and I think they have been doing some sort of something with the reverb.
Oh.
And so I've been trying to get it back to the level it's normally at, and it proves difficult.
A mix-up at a Cleveland daycare center started when a child was sent home with the wrong family. The incident happened at the Fatima Family Center Thursday afternoon. Cleveland Police Sergeant Sammy Morris said a grandfather went to pick up his three-year-old grandson at the daycare, and an employee gave the man the wrong child. The daycare didn't realize the mistake until the mother of the child came up to pick up her son. That's when they contacted Cleveland police. But at that time, the grandfather was on his way back to the daycare, having realized he had the wrong child.
Now, how old are they? When they say daycare, I mean, and you know, these are, this is what, toddlers? Or this
They're three.
They're three, so...
Just pick one out of the middle.
Yeah, apparently Grandpa didn't know the difference between this three-year-old and another three-year-old.
Because at a certain... Look, at a certain point, that's understandable. Like, there is that weird sort of, you know... There's
like
that.
It's a middle school kind of like after school care. Then you've got.
Yeah, I mean, I, you know, there's a certain point where I mean, well, let's be honest. This is why they put that little LoJack thing on him in the hospital, because you can't tell your baby from any. I don't care what anybody says. You can't tell your own baby from another person's baby.
Put them on a leash. Never let them out of your sight.
But there's, I mean, I think it's reasonable to assume that he would probably figure it out maybe before, you know, he left
college.
You know, but you know, what do I know?
Eventually, at some point, realizing that. Wait a minute.
Hold on.
There's not so many. I got nothing. I was going to say Asian genes in my pool, but that's.
That was just sort of. You were like one of the Mercury. One of the early Mercury shots right there. We just. On the test pad. 3-2. Ah, crap.
3-2 fail.
You got to wonder about the.
That's our sitcom. 3-2 fail.
3-2-1 canceled. You got to wonder about the kid who's 3 years old. Old enough, I think, to go like, hold on, hang on a second. This isn't a Buick.
Who are you? I'm your grandpa. No, you're really not.
Taking
Shut up.
Altogether. And yeah, he must have. You wonder if the kid is going like, you're stealing me. No, I'm not. Be quiet.
You kids today.
That'll come back at some point. You're going to be in a shrink's office. So that's just going to be. All right, here's Don Taylor.
Let's do our snuff watch.
Here is your snuff watch for Friday, February 18th, 2011. Don Taylor with your snuff watch.
Len Lesser, the 88-year-old character actor best known for playing Uncle Leo on Seinfeld.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Passed away Wednesday from cancer-related pneumonia. The New York-born World War II veteran had roles in such films as Outlaw Josie Wales, Birdman of Alcatraz, and Papillon, and appeared in a wide variety of television shows, including Get Smart, The Munsters, The Monkees, The Rockford Files, and ER. He's most recognized for the 15 episodes that he spent in the 90s on Seinfeld as Jerry's arm-grabbing, close-talking, Jerry, hello, exclaiming uncle. Lesser also guest starred in multiple episodes of Everybody Loves Raymond as a friend of Peter Boyle's. His last TV credit was a 2009 Castle episode.
And so I got to look him up here because please to spell.
L-E-S-S-E-R.
L-E-S-S-E-R.
Len Lesser.
Len. Because my Seinfeld foo is weak. Okay. So I totally know that guy. Well, there's like the character actor discussion we had the other day.
Right.
Yeah, I know this guy. I did not know him from. See, this is why I didn't put two and two together, because I came in and Sarah and Greg were like, "Hey, did you know that what's his name, Uncle Leo from Seinfeld, died?" And I just have like so little Seinfeld knowledge that's just it's like Friends is the same way. I mean, there's stuff that happens on Friends that I know, like, everybody in the rest of the country knows about, and it's like I'm completely oblivious. So
it's like Dreamcatcher, where like the thought palace has to make room after a certain age because more information's coming in. You have to get rid of like.
Well, and also just during the time that Seinfeld was on, when Seinfeld was ascendant and really was, you know, was becoming a thing that everybody in the country watched. I went through this period where I didn't have a TV because I had I was living with this girl, and then we broke up, and she took the TV with her, and I was just like so unbelievably, strangely enough, the only TV I had a busted ass like black and white television that I got from Goodwill for like $7 or something, because it was all I could afford. And of course, I didn't have cable, and so I would just. It's funny, actually, how this is. Now we're closing the circle, because I hadn't really thought about this. I was sort of mocking you for playing Nintendo on a black and white television. You would try watching porn on a black and white screen and trying to find that even moderately arousing. It's really, it's like you have to go with the classics then, because it's like that's where you can really only. It has to be. It's like. You know, it's like watching a low-budget movie where they have to compensate with really well-done dialogue, you know, and the situation and setup themselves have to be really creative to overcome the lack of production value. So it is with porn. It's like you really have to go straight to the Christie Canyon library for that, because the visuals, you know, they're only going to get you so far there.
I was going to say, because you're talking to someone. I mean, pornography got its start in black and white.
Yeah,
you know,
that's true.
So really, there's very little wiggle room. I lived in the brief window wherein there was the scrambled effect.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you had to kind of learn how to kind of augment, almost like a magic eye picture, how to properly view the naked female form.
I saw half a boob.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, when your family didn't get HBO, and there'd be, you know, and you know, the late night Cinemax movies would be on. But, yeah, you could just get just a little bit of it. Just a little. For a second, and then it was gone.
It's time for FYI theater. No, I would use the audio while I would use like a two-dimensional medium. So I kind of like...
So you have the porn sound while you're looking at the Sears lingerie section or whatever.
Or Fredericks of Hollywood or whatever was handy.
Fair enough.
Pun intended.
No, I had this black and white television and I didn't have cable and I didn't have... I think it either didn't come with an antenna because it was still black and white, but I think maybe they were trying to market it as being, it's like, you know, when Apple quit using 3.5 drives, they were like, no, this is a TV, for black and white TV for the modern era. And there were no, like, adjustable, or they just got snapped off at some point. So I got no television. I had no cable. I had this old crusty VCR with the black and white TV. So I would basically just sit there, you know, just like in a cracked vinyl chair alone, eating like a Red Baron pizza, watching the same three bad porn films. And then, like, I had some of those back when you would record things at home, like you'd record a television show or like a movie or something, and it on like the SLP speed so you could get 12 hours on a tape. And like whatever I had taped before I moved away from home, you know, so it would be like, you know, The Long Shot starring Tim Conway. And I would just watch it for the 9,000th time on a black and white TV and then just cry myself to sleep. Jesus. God
and
damn.
And look at you now.
Yeah.
Come on.
So Seinfeld. So then Seinfeld was ascended at this time in American history when for the beginning of the show's run, I was living by myself, had a bad television, didn't have cable. And then when the Seinfeld finale aired, which would have been, what, 97, 98?
Yeah.
Because I was still in Salt Lake. When the Seinfeld finale aired, I was actually – I won't say I was homeless, but I was actually living at work. Which is kind of like being homeless, I guess. So I was living at work where there was a television – but like I didn't want to draw too much attention to the fact that I was living there. So I tried to make very little noise at night. I tried just to sort of be you know.
Yeah.
All right. I don't even know where
talk
I was.
Talk it out, man. Talk it out. I feel like we're in a very good breakthrough
point. These are the things that you live through, and then it's only in retrospect when you look back and you go, God damn, and you realize just what a horrible, miserable life you've had for long long sections of time.
Cling to the good times, Rick. Cling. Okay.
Well, so that guy's dead. There's your snuff watch for Friday right here on the Rick Emerson radio program.
I need to share something here from the Facebooks.
Yes.
From Lisa Wood over at Big S Sandwiches. Took a picture but from behind the counter in the food cart. Apparently, they just got rid of the last Patton Oswalt special because they named a sandwich after Patton Oswalt. And apparently, it went to Brian Posehn.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
That's awesome.
Then there's a picture of Brian Posehn on their Facebook thing.
And the universe didn't collapse in on itself somehow? That's bizarre. Wow. I mean, that can't have happened by accident. But then again, that can't have been planned.
I mean, maybe it was like, well, we got enough stuff for just one more, and it's got to go to you. Yeah, I don't know.
What are the – I mean, statistically, the odds of that have just got to be – I mean, it's got to be like 1 in 100,000.
That's crazy.
Because it's got to be the day that he's in town. It's got to be, you know – I don't want to think about that. Oh, that's fantastic.
Yeah.
Well done. All right. You are listening to the Rick Emerson radio program here at rickemersonshow.com. Thank you for joining us. And this is all true. Don't forget still to come today. We have your religious nutcase watch. Also, we'll do clue number 5 for the EH vending name. That's not contest. And here in just a bit, we'll do today's installment of Humor Me, Comedy 101. Today, we'll talk about the life and work of Ms. Gilda Radner with Big Jim Willink. Here is Don Taylor.
Oh, It sounded like you were doing something
I think
else.
We've only done like two stories so far. So
states around the country are dealing with mounting budgets and trying to figure out how to save money. Connecticut's Governor Dan Malloy is proposing the decriminalization of possessing small amounts of marijuana, saying it will keep nonviolent offenders out of jail, thus saving the state money.
Okay. Let's see here.
I'm not saying we should make legal. I'm saying we should decriminalize. That people who have small amounts of marijuana, and I'm not advocating on behalf of marijuana, that they need to be given a road back.
Road back? To where?
I'm sorry.
To getting more small amounts of marijuana. All right.
What? That doesn't make any sense at all.
No, but I mean, you've got to but I guess you've got to admire him because he's in a tough position. Mm-hmm. Like, even if you are, I mean, if you're a politician and it sounds like, I mean, let's be honest. He's probably one of those guys where he knows, like we all do, that there's no freaking reason it should be illegal. It's dumb. We all know it's dumb. We all know it makes no financial sense to have it be prohibited. It makes no – there's no legal – no rational legal reason. Yeah. There's no health reason. But he can't come out and say it because a small group of crazy, highly mobilized, well-funded people will drive him out of office. So he's in a tricky position where he has to wrap himself in some weird origami, you know, knot trying to explain why it ought to be decriminalized even though he's not saying legalization.
Yeah, starting with the hair splitting between decriminalize and legalize. However, of course,
decriminalize sounds sexier.
Police Chief Harry Rilling thinks it's a bad idea and that it sends the wrong message.
It minimizes it to the level of going through a red light or a stop sign.
Okay. Decriminalize, by the way, here's the reason that phrase bugs me, because decriminalizing is just inaccurate. It's still illegal, so you're not decriminalizing it. Decriminalizing it means that it's no longer a crime, which isn't the case. They are just, but I guess there's no other word. It's like you said, it's like this. Yeah. It's like with the however much we.
If it's not illegal, but it's also not crime.
Legal. Well, it's like however much we disdain this now, the idea of the don't ask, don't tell of the civil unions, which were a way to try to like get something in under the radar without raising the ire of a bunch of nitwits who have nothing better to do with their time. So that was the way we originally tried to do that. We said, well, no, we're not legalizing it. You understand? We're just decriminalizing it. You know? And then he would just hope that they would hear that and go, well, it sounds like it's still, you know, it sounds like they're doing the right thing because it just you didn't really understand what it meant. But now it just seems dumb because everybody hears that and they know, as you said, exactly what you're trying to say. And it just it also makes no like logical sense. Hey, speaking of weed. You know, just in time, you're performing a show. Now, please to explain, you're performing a show at a marijuana dispensary.
That is correct.
That is awesome. How did you get now? Do you have an agent or how do you get booked for that stuff? I'm just curious. Like,
do you have an agent or a dealer?
Do they call you directly? I mean, I'm trying to picture the guy on the phone. And, hey, it's Maury, kid. I've got the best audience ever.
Now, don't say no. Don't say no.
They'll laugh at anything.
Well, and here's the funniest part is, okay, I get a phone call out of the blue after I'd already made it like a concerted decision that 2011 will be, for all practical purposes, stimulant and vice-free. I get a phone call from a friend of mine saying, hey, I know that this isn't your thing anymore, but I'm putting on a show. I've been putting on the show at this marijuana dispensary. Would you be interested in coming on and doing a set? Now, it's been my intention that marijuana enthusiasts, will say, don't really need much in the realm of entertainers to come and entertain
You're
them.
You're over-solving the problem.
Yeah, when using a dirt devil has become fun and, you know, entertaining, then you don't really need me up there, like, flinging the funny. So I agree because I'm just like, yeah, sure. So I have a story to tell. Like, yeah, I've done marijuana. I've done marijuana. So.
I've done the pot.
With the president in town, I'm going to go ahead and admit that. That's fine. I'd be willing to do this show at the dispensary. That was a couple weeks back. I'd forgotten what date it was. And so I got in contact with the person that had booked this. I'm just like, hey, I'm trying to figure out what time, what day you want to still do the show. And all I get texted back to me is ? I'm just like, this is, you know, you're doing a show at the dispensary? Yeah. What? I don't have you on the – I don't – who is this? And I'm like, seriously, like, I had not – he still knew who I was. We were still friends. He had just completely –
it's hard to believe that this is a disorganized operation.
Really? You know? So he couldn't quite figure out why it was that I was under the assumption that I was working this gig.
I so regret asking this question at all. It's like an hour ago that I said, tell me about the – how'd you get it?
Well, it seems to be infectious because I, you know, I'm doing my best to now kind of get a clearer mind, clearer head. But he made me feel like I was still very much a pothead because I was assuming that I was involved in this. He's like, "Are you sure you didn't talk to somebody else?" I'm like, "No, I talked to you."
Is this like one of those movies where it's like the guy gets fired from his job but has to continue to leave the house every day so the wife thinks he's employed? Or do you really – you don't have to lie to us, Jim. If there really is no gig, if there is no clinic, you can just tell us.
I'm entertaining the homeless is what it is. I'm going to basically be on the max entertaining those.
like John Travolta in Mad City, just sitting at a theater every day crying.
Well, I've talked to other comics that have done the venue, so it does exist. I will show – but I'm like, I don't have
a card. That's
a
start.
Still doesn't know if he's actually invited there or not, but
either way,
it exists.
And it's not something that I can promote because you have to have a card to be able to get in, but
right.
I don't have a card, so I don't know how I'm going to be able to be allowed.
Do you have to get cancer before you can go?
I'm looking at my TV, my black and white TV right now as we speak. But I will figure this out tomorrow night. Should you be in the 82nd Avenue area, please come to the dispensary. I'm going to actually show up there just to be safe in my SWAT costume that I wore at Halloween, just as a way of kind of like, you know, hey, I'm not going to stand out. I'm going to, you know, look the part. I'm going to go the full night, keep their attention.
I really wish that I could get in as a member of the media or something just to sort of see this, because it seems like it would either be the best audience ever or maybe the worst, because it's like if you start strong with one good joke, the laughter may never subside. There may not be an opportunity to give a second joke. I mean, it just maybe just be a wall of response that goes on forever.
Yeah, or it's just like that constant look of like I'm trying to process everything.
I think that's
or
funny.
Anything.
Or they do that nodding where they just go, yeah, that's funny.
Jingly keys and try and look like an authority figure that they might be afraid of. So, one way or the other, I'm going to have their attention. I hope.
It's funny, just talking about that, I was home visiting my mom a few weeks ago. My mom works at a she's a nurse and she works at a hospice. And you know, a lot of people in the hospice are there because they have you know, cancer and whatever. And Washington has the thing. Oregon doesn't have it completely solved, but in Washington they've only gotten as far as the legalizing medical marijuana. But there are no dispensaries. There's no, like, you know, they don't have any sort of like, because here it's like they tried to get the thing of having the state run clinics and they haven't quite figured it out. But in Washington they don't really have anything. I mean, they basically just sort of said like, well, we think it's a good idea, but everything after that is up to you. And so my mom was telling me the story where, like, and my mom's like 70, what year is this, 2011? My mom is 75. So she's working at this hospice and, you know, the other nurses are there and they've got this cancer patient who was, the doctors can't prescribe like here, but they said the doctor can recommend. The doctor can say, well, in your position and with your the amount of pain you're suffering and your expected, you know, your life expectancy at this point, yes, I would recommend medical marijuana as an alleviative. And so, and then the woman just sort of shrugs, and my mom is telling me this story, and then my mom and Laura and I are sitting here listening to it, and my mom actually says, and I don't know where to get grass. I mean,
they still sell that?
Awesome.
Still looking for Johnny.
And the idea that my mom, that my mother, who I would come home on a regular basis and she had thrown away my rock and roll albums because they were going to be leading me to a fiery abyss somewhere where I would be jabbed by the guy with the horns and the stick for all eternity, that my mom is then telling me with this sort of like Edie McClurg tone to her voice as though it's a big problem, and I don't know where to find grass. Like, it was just the weirdest moment where like the universe sort of like shimmied for a second and I felt like it was in some alternate universe.
Well, she's still living in Kennewick, right?
Well, that's,
so where can't she find grass?
Well, if she's to be believed, you know, when I was growing up, you just go to the bowling alley. Because everybody at the bowling alley, I was forbidden to go to the bowling alley when I was growing up because that's where the grass was sold. Like my friends would be like, "We're gonna go bowling." My dad said, "You're not going to a bowling alley. That's where they sell the grass." You know, and then it was always grass. Let me ask you this, because I was so then Laura and I were having this conversation. We're like, I mean, now we sound like stoners, but my wife and I were then driving to get dinner or something that night. We were driving to the pizza place, and occasionally we would just snicker to ourselves in the car and just go, grass. But we had this whole discussion about grass, weed, pot. Is there something, am I missing something else that the kids say?
Reefer.
Nope. Reefer. And we were trying to figure out which of those was the catch-all term tied to no particular generation or era.
Maybe pot.
The dope.
Yeah, see, but dope, I think. No, dope, I was.
Dope is like an all universal.
Dope
know.
Could mean a lot of things. Because,
yeah,
I mean, dope could be the heroin.
But I know that they were calling it dope like in the 20s.
But you wouldn't call it dope now. People, you would get snickered at, I would think. Just like if you call it grass.
I would have to purchase a bag of dope from you, please.
Yeah. I mean, if you call it dope, it's like you're either a dad or you're a cop or you're just,
it's
you know.
It's an episode
you're
of Murphy Brown and you got Jim in the park somewhere trying to procure you a.
But Mary Jane, that was always one of my favorites.
Mary Jane, I think, Mary Jane, dope, grass, those are all very 60s terms.
Yeah.
Weed, we were talking about weed, we figured that weed was a thing that was too casual. That was a too that was contemporary, but it was also a thing that you only used in certain environments and with certain people. Like, that was a real dirtbag kind of a way to refer to it. It was like maybe you and your friends, but you wouldn't call it that if you were talking to the doctor. I guess the doctor, you'd call it medical marijuana. But if you were in sort of neutral company, you would say pot.
Yeah.
Like if you were talking about the, you know, if you were talking about it in terms of just academics, you would say pot. But yeah, just the idea that my mom, and then apparently, and then so my mom, so the way they finally solved the problem, this tells you everything you need to know about my family. The way that they finally solved the problem of, I don't know where to get weed, is my mom asked her boyfriend to have his son go like rustle some up. somewhere. Because she said, because we all know that he smokes the grass. So we figured, you know, why not? So that's the weirdest conversation with your mom. Like, I won't even swear in front of my mother. Like, my wife, it's like all she can do to my wife can barely drink a beer in front of my mom. Because it's that whole thing of like your parents or your in-laws, like you just, you know, you just don't picture them. You feel like you got to be in your best behavior. So there's my mom telling us about how she's having her boyfriend have his son go buy grass to give to my mom to take back to her workplace with her. It's just the strangest thing ever. So anyway, so the general public is not going to be able to see your chuckle fest at the marijuana dispensary. But
that is correct, yeah.
But it's an interesting – is that like a regular thing? I mean, do they have comics there on an ongoing basis?
I guess, yeah. It seems to be a weekly event. These poor bored stoners are just – they need entertainment. So we come out there kind of very much like a hospice-type situation where we come in, we make them laugh, and then we leave. Kind of like jokes on wheels.
This case, laughter really is the second best medicine, I would say, though. In this.
A distant third, I would say.
Yeah. By the way, if you reminded me, I've been playing – speaking of guys calling you up and saying, now look, this will sound a little weird, but hear me out. I've been playing the phone tag with my agent for the last couple of days because he left me this message on today's Friday, so I guess on Wednesday. He leaves me this message going, so, hey, it's Sal. So, I've got this movie audition they've requested you for, if you want to do it. And then he had this long pause and he goes, which I don't think you will, but, you know, call me back. And so then I called him back and I missed him. He called me this morning, missed me, and I called him back and missed him just now before we did the show. So I have no idea what the movie role is for, but it's for a movie. So it's not a TV show. It's not a commercial. It's a movie. He said that they've requested I audition. So somebody specifically asked for me. And then he said, if you want to do it, which I don't think you will. And so it is like I almost don't want to find out the answer because it's so tantalizing.
Smell Transformers.
It's like, it's so intriguing now. I can't even imagine like what it would be that he would assume on my behalf I don't want to do it.
You just auditioned for like one line in a mattress commercial.
I had to go ad lib in an audition for a mattress commercial in which I was going to like, you know, towsel the hair of a young boy or something. By the way, did I tell you that when they were having this ad lib that they gave us a chair to be the part of the dog. The dog was played by a chair.
Okay.
There you go. In any event, the reason I brought up the whole weed thing is because listener Ryan, I read this email on the air, he says, let's see, Rick, I thought I remembered you talking about Cranky with a K, which is a snack that I found for sale at a Mexican grocery in Provo when I was there with my wife in December. He says, I was in Mexico last week and found these at a store called Mega. I had a few more packages, but they didn't quite make it home. Now that you know where to get it, which is Mexico, apparently. See if EH Vending will stock at Best Show Ever. Ryan, have you ever had Cranky, the candy?
I have not had Cranky.
Dude, and here's – let me just tell you. I'm going to give this to you. You can have this whole bag for yourself.
You want an easy win at the marijuana dispensary
bring
show.
Bring some Cranky.
Just bring some bags of this, and this will entertain them.
No end.
It causes me just agony of the most acute variety to do this, but because Rick Emerson cares, and also because I can't take these both on myself because I will eat them both myself. You were to have this. you should try some of that now if you want to, or later if you prefer. But I'm telling you, it's fantastic. Here's what Cranky is: they're individual cornflakes. Enrobed, bathed, swathed in the finest chocolate. And then the amazing thing, and I don't know how he asked this in the email. This really does sound like a stone question, but he asked how they do the individual wrapping of the flakes without them sticking together, because it doesn't clump together. They're individual, separate cornflakes covered in chocolate, and they are incredible. It really is. It's fantastic. Did I tell you the story that me and the cranky after I brought that bag of it to the studio?
This is the one that involves the ice cream, or
no? Not? It's just that so we were in Provo and we found this at the store, and I told Laura, I'm like, when you come back from Provo, because I was heading to the airport, I'm like, you got to bring a box of this stuff home because it's wonderful, and I can't find it. You know, I don't think they have it in Portland. So she brought this box of crankets, 10 of these bags home from Provo, and I brought some to the studio, and that didn't last very long. It was almost immediately gone. And so then, just like a monkey with a drug button, I'm online, just like going to every website I can possibly think of, trying to find Cranky, and all I'm finding, by the way, are just websites about like designer drugs that kids are huffing in like Switzerland or something.
And so the mascot is a little animated K.
Yeah,
like I'm Special K, the Cranky mascot,
and so, he's happy. He's very happy.
And so then
he's full of Cranky.
I find this Mexican sort of candy and grocery outlet online. And then I do the thing of, like, thinking, it's an internet delivery. Not unlike if you're going to buy something, it's going to go inside a delicate section of your anatomy. They deliver it inside a plain bag so no one knows of your shame. So I'm like, click, buy, you know, what size? Large, you know, the most.
Add to cart.
How many? The most I can possibly get, you know. and proceed directly to checkout. And so then I'm thinking, like, aha, this is fantastic. The Cranky's going to arrive and I will be able to sate my hunger and no one will be the wiser. And then, like, 4 minutes later, I get this email from Bruce Agler saying, I just saw the strangest bill show up in the Emerson News Network credit card. Do you know what mexgrocer.com is? And I had inadvertently, I guess it was because it's, like, linked to the PayPal, I had inadvertently just billed it to the company. And then, like, 5 minutes later, I get an email from Cheryl. She's like, what's mexgrocer.com and who's buying things from there? And I tried to feign a whole lot of, like, I don't know what that is. And then Cheryl immediately, I don't even think I had formed a response when she actually emailed back and she said, you're buying more of that Cranky, aren't you?
And we had a temp.
I was forced to admit that I, in fact, was. So,
now, is this to be mainlined, or can I smoke this?
Okay, come on. How great is that stuff?
It's pretty badass.
It is fantastic. Let me just tell you, put that on some ice cream. Dude.
Oh, my God.
You know what I did? Can I just tell you how I finished off the last three bags of that? Because they come 10 to a box. I finished three bags, two of them in one sitting, by the way. I was watching an episode of House. I literally just got a half-gallon thing of ice cream in one hand, and then I had just the bags of Cranky in the other. I didn't even do the thing of mixing them in the bowl. I literally poured bags of Cranky into the tub of ice cream. Like, I took the lid off the ice cream, ate enough to make an indentation, and because you can't smash it down. It doesn't compress the way you'd like. Then just poured the Cranky.
Cranky nest, if you will.
I just poured it directly into the ice cream, like, box or whatever, get the container. And then just, you know, so sad. And just ate it, you know, just like 3 a.m. where you're just hoping that you don't hear the bedroom door open, because I would not have time to stash everything away before Laura walked by the office and saw my, you know.
I don't care. Look at my shame.
The horrible man thing that she was married to. Oh, I suck. All right, here's Don Taylor.
Let's do our religious nutcase watch.
I wish I was dead. All right, here's your religious nutcase watch for Friday. The best part is, as I'm just saying, I wish I was dead, I look over just to see you, like, shoving more of it into your mouth and
eating them off the table. This won't show up in the UA, right?
I wish that I had never discovered that stuff. I wish that we had walked by that Mexican grocer. By the way, speaking of our religious nutcase watch theme, Striper's going to be the Aladdin March 3rd, baby.
To hell with the devil!
That's what I'm saying.
All right, here's Striper.
Don Taylor with your religious nutcase watch.
One of the first two girls ever to make it to Iowa's state wrestling tournament was named champion by default on Thursday after one of the state's strongest high school wrestlers refused to face her. In a statement released by his high school, sophomore Joel Northrup praised Cassie Herkelman's accomplishments and lamented the fact he had been put in this position. As a matter of conscience and my faith, I do not believe that it is appropriate for a boy to engage a girl in this manner.
What now with his? See, because I saw this headline last night, but I didn't read the full story. I just saw, you know, boy forfeits against girl wrestler, and I immediately I immediately understood, like, I don't want to say took his side, but I immediately sort of with that. I mean, you can't. Did you wrestle? Was it you that wrestled in high school?
No.
Jim? Okay, but I mean, I
did get my ass kicked by a couple girls, but that was completely unrelated.
I saw the headline. I didn't read the whole story. I didn't know he was like putting it on his faith or the.
Yeah, no.
What is that about?
It's Jesus' fault.
His father is a Pentecostal minister, and they believe that young men and women shouldn't touch in a familiar way.
Okay, well. Okay.
I'm sorry.
Northrop won 35 of his 39 matches this season and throughout his career has steadfastly refused to wrestle girls. Megan Black, the other girl to make it to the tournament, told the Associated Press that Northrop took a similar stance in refusing to wrestle her 3 years ago. If it's his religion and he's strong in his religion, then I respect that, Black said. Obviously, everyone can be pointing fingers at him. He at least is true to his beliefs, and you have to respect that. It takes a lot for a 15 to 16 or 16-year-old boy to do.
I mean, I get the whole thing of him saying I won't wrestle a girl because
well, why?
Because it's an are you asking? Because yeah, it's a no-win situation for him. Because if he gets his ass kicked by a girl, he can never go to school again. But if he wins, no matter how good she is, and I'm assuming she's good, no matter how good she is, he is always on paper the guy that, yeah, but you beat a girl. I'm not saying that he views it that way or that that is right or fair. I'm saying he's a 15-year-old guy. He's in high school,
yeah.
And it is a no-win situation. And asking a high schooler, boy or girl, to take a principled stand, which they know will make them the object of ridicule for the next 2.5 years, is just unrealistic. It's just not going to happen. High school sucks,
yeah.
And I'm not going to ask a teenager in high school to do something that we know will result in them being ridiculed for the rest of their time there.
But it's the state level. It's not like this is like an introductory match. I think at that point, if she'd been able to kick as much butt as she had to get to the state level, you know.
I don't disagree.
Give
I'm not saying that.
A couple of wine coolers and see
these two girls mentioned in the story are the first girls to qualify for the state tournament since it was first sanctioned. Back in like 1926.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure.
So these girls are really good.
I'm sure they're skilled, but unfortunately, that just doesn't matter. That's the thing is, I'm sure they're good, but it doesn't. No one cares about that in high school. They care about that you won against a girl, or like you got your ass kicked by a girl. And his life sucks anyway because his dad's a Pentecostal minister. So,
but now he's the object of ridicule because it's like, you know, he forfeited because I'm not allowed to touch ladies.
See, that's the third
but
side.
But see, I don't think so. That's the deal because it's just like the governor who's talking about decriminalizing. This is totally everybody who matters, which is the people he goes to school with, all know the deal. By hearing this story, when he says, well, as a matter of faith, I can't wrestle a girl. All of the people that he sees every day, they know exactly what's going on. And they hear this and they go, ah, I get it. Can't wrestle the girl because of the matter of faith. So that's the thing is this is exactly the right thing for him to have done. It's one thing for you to say, but he doesn't care about you. He doesn't know you. The people he goes to school with know exactly this. And especially the guys he goes to school with, they, because they're teenage guys, know exactly the Kobayashi Maru that he was put in. And they look at this and they go, well done, sir.
Yeah.
This is exactly the right tack for him.
And the only way for him to really kind of, I was going to actually make a Kobayashi Maru reference, would be to get around that, would be like to enact like the just one of the guys directive where like the only way he could wrestle her is if she had, fooled everyone by pretending to be a dude and then got to that level and then.
You know what this is like? This is like when, a teacher shows up and stops a fight, which is the best possible outcome. Because if your teacher shows up, winning the fight, it means you've beaten the guy senseless, then you have to deal with the repercussions of that. Getting your ass kicked means you got your ass kicked. Teacher stops the fight, then it's fine. Everybody can draw their own conclusions. Nobody had to prove anything, and everybody understands that the man stepped in.
Unless you're fighting Buddy Ravel.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly what I'm saying. Don't have this one up!
Control!
I did a pastor in the kids' church, which is called the Believers in Grace Fellowship, said, we believe in the elevation and respect of women, and we don't think that wrestling a woman is the right thing to do. Body slamming and takedowns, that full contact sport is not how to do that.
First of all, you don't body slam in high school. You know, I mean, unless are they using glow rules? Like, are we talking about gorgeous ladies wrestling?
Whoa! Wow!
Like Hollywood and like Mount Fuji are going to be ringside doing color commentary?
That's like an inside straight of obscure references. Glow.
This
is so good.
I had a boyfriend. He's talking about the cranky, not the glow.
Both are really good.
I actually thought I meant the show.
I had a boyfriend. I dated a guy, and he was sharing a house with some friends in the San Fernando Valley, and some of the glow wrestlers practiced
really
next door, and they would like peek over the wall and watch. And they actually had a practice ring in the backyard of the house next door, and they would like watch over their back wall.
It's like if my libido in high school had a libido and a fantasy. That's what. Oh my God! Really?
You kids, glow was gorgeous ladies of wrestling, which is a thing that used to exist. So that's who knows? Maybe the kid himself is really some crazy religious nut job. Who knows? Maybe he is. Maybe he's not. But this is the perfect scenario for him because now he doesn't have to take either of the two horrible outcomes he would have been faced with. Because how much fun is your life anyway if you're in high school and your dad is a Pentecostal minister?
This might be his only chance to touch a girl, though.
I mean, he might have really forfeited his only chance at some sort of contact.
The Lord sent a singlet, may not reveal too much, just enough.
And considering, how crazy they are about homosexuality, the idea that, they're pro, boys wrestling each other.
That's fine. He had to shower with, 40 other naked dudes.
Well, that's because they're crazy about homosexuality. That's the... they're not crazy about
homosexuality.
They're crazy about it. I keep staring at the bag of cranky over
back
there.
Off,
you said you had something for me, but
I do. Let me just close this out. Hold on. Here's your religious nutcase watch.
Good night, Kennewick. We love you.
I saw they've been at the Aladdin, I think, three times in the last 3 years. They must have... It's playing again. Bands like that must keep very, very careful, calculations about, what cities work out really well for them. Because we were joking, I think, with Ryan White about how Bowling for Soup seems to be here, all the time. Because they must have just figured out... They must just look at their balance sheets at the end and then go, our big cities were Topeka, Portland, and Schenectady. And so they just hit those three over and over again. Striper is here all the time.
Yeah.
Which makes you wonder then, because the thing is that what's his name? Michael Sweet from Striper is now the lead singer for Boston. And so now you wonder if there's some weird sort of...
But not on Sundays.
...puzzle piece of Boston can't tour now, or Boston has got to get one of the guys from REO Speedwagon or something to fill in. Before we do Humor Bee Comedy 101, so I should say that you've gone all giggly on us.
I'm sorry.
He's giddy with joy.
When she said touching girls in a familiar way, it's like you did a full-on belly chortle.
He likes touching girls.
So this morning I had on the way here, I'd stopped at the store to get myself a Viso, which really ought to be provided free to us. I got the dark chocolate Snickers bar, which truthfully I didn't like all that much. I don't mind dark chocolate. I quite like dark chocolate, actually. There's a dark chocolate Hershey bar that I like a lot. But it's this I didn't really – something I didn't care for about it. But we'd had the Snickers – the peanut butter Snickers bar earlier this week. And so you, of course, then brought me a dark chocolate Kit Kat. Mm-hmm. Here's what I brought for you, though, Don Taylor, to follow up on the – it is Hershey's milk chocolate drops.
Let me see. All right.
Which are, again, they taste just like a regular Hershey bar. There's no – but the gimmick is
– yeah, no candy shell, yet no mess.
They don't melt. So it's like if you have a chocolate bar, but you like the Hershey's chocolate bar, but you find them messy, or that it melts or it smudges in your hands. This is basically that made into a series of oversized M&Ms that do not melt in your hand yet don't have a candy shell.
I would like to say to the people at Hershey's, by the way, I think you are seriously taking liberties with the words king size.
Yeah.
This is 2.1 ounces.
It's actually – it weighs less than a bag of M&Ms, a regular bag of M&Ms.
King size.
Yeah. No, that's their – they're
just shell.
Effing you. Oh, my God. Look at this. Do we really all each have a candy?
We all have candy.
Specialized candy item.
So this is – this is interesting.
They're just huge M&Ms.
Oh, and it's all shiny. it has a candy shell.
But it's
just polished chocolate.
See, that's what I mean. How it doesn't melt in your hand, yet it isn't. It doesn't have the actual candy coating like an M&M. It is just a Hershey's bar with it. It's like a glaze of sugar.
Yeah.
Jim, you should try one of those.
It's like the same people that robe the cranky in chocolate are the same ones that buff the M&Ms.
Buffing the M&M and robing the cranky.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean, if you really, yeah, I mean, it's like if you...
astronauts eat.
If you wanted to take it, like in the car or something, and you find the chocolate bar kind of messy with the, you know, the unwrapping, and it melts, and it smears all over your hands or whatever. This is, I think, their solution to that.
Well, here's what it says on the back. It says, enjoy all the goodness of bite-sized chocolate without a candy shell and without the mess. Hershey's milk chocolate drops are perfect for snacking and sharing. Pure Hershey's happiness anytime, anywhere.
But I thought the shell, that was the point, was to keep the M&M from being messy. I mean, unless you're like a four-year-old and you're like, you got a fistful of M&Ms for a good hour while you're running around the playground. And then...
That's the old technology, my friend. Now we have,
Get with the times.
Whatever this is.
The candy shell was actually, because the M&Ms are, of course, the American version of Smarties, and the candy shell was actually developed to keep them from melting when soldiers would have them as part of their, their rations. But as Don said, that was another time when you had a blunt force solution to every problem. Wrap it in candy.
I wonder if this is coated in the, like, the Desert Storm unmeltable chocolate.
It's coated in an invisible shield.
Well, you know, they Hershey came up with these.
Oh, was it a special, like, desert chocolate?
Yeah, they can't, during Operation Desert Storm, Hershey's came up with a special chocolate bar that it melts at a much higher temperature.
We've just entered some Wonka
and
world.
I wonder if that's what this is that now it can go up to, rather than melting at body temperature, it can go up a little higher so you can hold on to it for
Makes you wonder what the military has now, because I always figure they're many steps ahead of the rest of us. So there you go. I thought I am a huge sucker. As much as I don't have a sweet tooth, I love novelty candy. Candy was totally, that is like the weakness for me, because it's, you know, it's like the brand new shiny thing. Let's do this real quickly, and then I will firing the music to begin Humor Me Comedy 101. I will take this moment, though, to say that the Rick Emerson Radio Program is brought to you by, among other folks, Squires Electric at squireselectric.com. That is squireselectric.com. You can find out more about them by going to squireselectric.com or 503-252-1609. By the way, the name of this Lenny D composition, Ball in the Jack. SquiresElectric.com is the website, or you can call them at 503-252-1609. If you're going to be moving into a different abode or upgrading the home you got now, if you're going to be either putting in some fancy piece of electronic, some sort of elaboratified version of the television that is going to dwarf everything else in your living room, you want to make sure it's wired in correctly. Or if you're going to be expanding, you're going to be adding another room onto your home, you're going to be taking one business into two locations to three locations. Maybe, let me ask you this, maybe you just got yourself a vending machine from EH Vending, but you want to make sure that the power draw is not going to cause some sort of a problem with your wiring. Bam, two birds, the single stone, Squires Electric. There you go. SquiresElectric.com is the website, at 503-252-1609. Free estimates up front so you know about what you're going to pay. If it has to do with wires or wiring in your home or business, you want to contact them. As many of our listeners have, I don't have this in front of me. I have to read it on Monday. We got another testimonial from a listener who had heard us talk about Squires Electric, and then they had an electrical issue at their business. Somebody had plugged the wrong thing into something else, and then there's just a whole lot of shorting out. And the worst problem there is that when something goes wrong with the wiring, like 9 times out of 10, it's inside the walls of your home or your business where you can't see what's going on. And then you do that house thing of going, you know, CSI, like, zoom, and you get the bad CGI where you zoom inside the wall where there's just like a fire smoldering away next to like the newspapers that the guys who built the house shoved inside the baseboard.
And wires that are being gnawed by rats.
Exactly.
We have a small collection of oily rags sitting next to them.
So you don't have to worry about this. You call Squires Electric, they'll come out, they'll fix it, and they're going to give you an estimate up front so you know what it's going to cost you. 503-252-1609, proud sponsors of the Rick Emerson Radio Program. It is Squires Electric at 503-252-1609. Yes, Don, you look like you were going to say something.
Nothing, I'm just having one of those chocolate serotonin rushes over
here. Yeah, I'm having to postpone the eating the dark chocolate Kit Kat because it's going to give me that whole, like, mouth thing going on. And without further ado, ladies and gentlemen, will you please give your attention to Mr. Big Jim Willig? He is here because it is Friday with another installment of Humor Me Comedy 101.
Thank you very much, Rick Emerson. Well, comedy is riddled with deadly pitfalls. You got drugs, alcohol, Tom Arnold. It's so easy to make mistakes when the world is handed to you on a silver platter, drenched in coke and concubines, and then scrutinized by the very people you're paid to entertain. Many entertainers crumble under this kind of pressure. Belushi, Farley, Hedberg all left us before the final curtain, and that's a tragedy, but one that could have been avoided. What of those superstars that were robbed of the privilege of burnout? Stars like Gilda Radner. Gilda didn't have a secret drinking problem or a gazebo made out of crack. All she had was impeccable comic timing, unrelenting charm, and the ability to act exactly like somebody that you knew personally, but in a way that made both seem like something out of a cartoon. Radner was Lorne Michaels' first choice for the original SNL cast, probably his last good idea, too, and proof that magic does indeed come out of Detroit. And though her heart belonged to Gene Wilder, Gilda captured all of our hearts with characters like the marginally inappropriate Roseanne Dana.
Sorry. Oh, that's totally my fail. I've hit the... there we go.
Thursday, I quit smoking. Now, I'm depressed, I gained weight, my face broke out, I'm nauseous, I'm constipated, my feet swelled, my gums are bleeding, my sinuses are clogged, I got heartburn, I'm Frankie, and I have gas. What should I do? Mr. Fader, you sound like a real attractive guy.
Awesome.
As well, the lovable loser, known only as Lisa Loebner.
Weekend Update recognizes its obligation to present responsible opposing viewpoints to our editorial.
That's my fault. I'm sorry. So I'm... Let's see.
There's a newer email.
I completely choked. I'm sorry. I've brought shame on everyone here. Let me do this.
Play that saxophone some more.
Yeah, the problem is I'm trying to play these off the same bank, too, so I get the intro over and over again. Hold on a second. And... I don't think I got that, Jim. I'll return to that here in just a second.
But even cancer couldn't ruin Radner's routine. Before passing, Gilda's Club was established so that others with the same diagnosis could comfort each other in a non-clinical environment. Proof that laughter is not only the best medicine, but one that we can all afford. Though her star only burnt half as long, Gilda Radner's light is one that illuminates the path for us all. And on that, I turn the spotlight to the two noogies sharing the studio with me at this time, Mr. Rick Emerson and Don Taylor. Your thoughts on Gilda Radner?
Don Taylor.
Oh, I'm a fan of Gilda, and just one of the just thinking about her makes me a little sad. I've read her autobiography, called It's Always Something.
Yeah.
When she did her Broadway show after she left Saturday Night Live, where she brought a bunch of her characters onto Broadway, and it's one of those things that I usually don't really think works very well. The whole, you know, I'm a comic and I do sketch comedy, and now I'm going to like do a one person show where I do all my characters, and yet her show was awesome.
Yeah.
It was filmed by directed by Mike Nichols for as a motion picture, and you can catch it there. But it was. Was terrific, and some of her old pals like Don Novello were part of that show.
Yeah.
I don't know what to say about it. She was very, very funny, and she was only 46, I think, when she died.
Just about, yeah. She always seemed younger too, which made it even more like a tragedy. But with Gilda, it was like her comedy was like effortless. Like watching Clapton play the guitar, like it doesn't look like he ever. You could never imagine Clapton taking guitar lessons, like G G G G D. You just don't imagine that ever actually happening.
Well, it's like when they say by people, you never catch them acting.
Yeah,
you know, you see William H. Macy, and you don't ever see the gears turning. I do actually have, and I apologize for mangling this so earlier, but I've got that the Lisa Loebner cut, which. You know, and I have a real, I won't say that I don't like them, but it's real tricky territory when people try to establish characters as comedians, because so often the character is just a collection of elaborate tics, and sometimes not even that elaborate. It's just a collection of quirky tics and mannerisms and a catchphrase shoved together into a thing that they hope is funny or endearing. The thing about Gilda Radner is even when she was playing people that were, I don't know, just not even that they were unlikable, but she was sometimes playing people who didn't have a lot of charm. Or who were
palatable.
Yeah, they were not graceless. They just didn't have a lot to recommend them. They were all sort of endearing.
Yeah.
You know, and they were all, I mean, you know, Roseanne Dana is a great example of that. And you know, Emily LaTella,
yeah.
Who is just sort of, you know, who's just kvetching for a long period of time. Or Lisa Loebner, who we have, I think... I think we have right here. This is the audio of her as Lisa Loebner.
It was composed by my idol, Marvin Hamlisch. And the lyrics were written by Marilyn and Alan Bergman, with whom it is my dream for Marvin and I to someday double date.
And it's like you hear that voice and you think, well, you know, this is such a strident, off-putting, you know, nasal character. Or the, like, the Baba Wawa thing, which could... theoretically could burn out its welcome so quickly.
Yeah.
But the thing about it is I don't pretend to know what she was really like or what Gilda Radner's actual personality was. But Gilda Radner, the performer, always seemed very charming. Again, I don't know Gilda Radner, the actual person, although based on It's Always Something, which is her book, you know, she had a streak of humanity that was very evident in her, and that came through all of her characters.
Yeah.
And no matter who she was playing or how she was doing it, you know, there was always something likable underneath the surface, which I can only imagine came from Gilda Radner herself.
Yeah.
That was there just lurking underneath whoever she was playing.
The magic of the Lisa Loebner character was always one that I thought was the perfect match to, especially in the early SNL days, with Bill Murray. And just the way that those two kind of like nerds.
His name? Todd?
Todd and Lisa, yeah. The two of them together were just, they were just incredible. The way they would kind of climb into these characters and completely lose themselves. And yet you couldn't stop watching. And it was something that not only was it that they could just sort of become these characters, the fact that they could do them so easily meant that they could push that even farther. It's like getting into a fast car and then strapping a rocket on the back and just watching it go. It was just remarkable. And if you go on YouTube, unfortunately, you'll find a lot of just annoying couples attempting to reenact the magic of Todd and Lisa. And it's just... It so detracts from the magic that those two had, when at the same time they're just trying to give just a small homage to them. I mean, obviously, imitation is the most sincerest form of flattery, but leave it to those that know how, and just kind of keep that to your Halloween party or whatever it is that you're going for.
I think one of my favorite characters she ever did, though, is that there was, I'm not sure if it was, I guess it was a recurring character. It may have just been one sketch, and it's just burned in my memory so brightly, but where she played a little girl who was in her bedroom.
Right.
Doing the whole talking.
Like a spastic, manic little girl.
Right, and
yeah.
Jumping on the bed and talking into her hairbrush and putting on the show, you know, in her bedroom. And it's like, how can you not relate to that? Because I think pretty much all three of us here in this room.
If it's the same one I'm thinking of, she broke her ribs during that sketch. There's a sequence where she walks into a closet. She's spiraling around her room just like she's just out of her mind on pixie sticks. And she turns and she has a large wardrobe, like an armoire sort of a thing. And the door either had swung open or she just miscalculated her distance. And she turns around. She goes, bam! And she reels back from the door for a second, and then she continues the sketch. And apparently, she cracked three of her ribs, and she just continued. She just continued going, and but the thing is, you watch that, and there's no. If I had not read that somewhere else, you would never have known, because she is totally invested in the character. And again, a character that could be really one note, that could, in lesser hands, just have no subtlety or nuance. It would be totally forgettable. But the thing about that little girl character, who I forget the name of, and I don't know if it was an ongoing thing or if I just have seen it a million times because they've replayed it, is that she's absolutely charming. I mean, that's I think the word for it. And charm doesn't just come, you know, it's not like just because you're a female comedian somehow you're going to be charming. You know, yeah. Brett Butler's allegedly a woman. She's not charming. there was something about Gilda Radner, and it was like, softness is the wrong word for it, but she seemed like a fully rounded, a very human person underneath that, and I think that informed all of her characters.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at just the pictures of her, you know, you can just, you feel endeared to her from just a two-dimensional standpoint. Like, you can just, you've never met her, you've never spoken a word to her, you may not even ever heard her perform, but just by looking at her, you have this sensation of just jaw, you're just, I don't know what it is, she just pulls you in a way. And she very much was like, kind of like a live-in-the-moment person. She, when she met Gene Wilder, I guess, on a set of a movie. They were pretty much in love almost instantly.
I just, you know, it is a testament to, and this is largely because of, I guess, because of her book and because of the, you know, and they made, did they make a movie out of It's Always Something?
No.
Maybe am I thinking of something? They must have done that something else. But there was, I guess there was an SNL sort of a tribute to her that aired a little bit after she died. But she had written It's Always Something. And I think it is a testament to the power of that book and the way that she described not just the cancer stuff and the time that she was at Gene Wilder, but her whole life. But that I, to this day, can't really look at Gene Wilder without thinking of her.
Yeah.
And as you know, Dawn said that when she thinks of Gilda Radner, she gets sad. I actually feel that way when I look at Gene Wilder because they were so clearly just like nuts about each other.
Yeah.
And she was coming off a really, really weird, apparently very like unstable relationship with Bill Murray when she got together with Gene Wilder.
No, actually, she was still married to G.E. Smith.
No, but she was with G.E. Smith, but she and Bill Murray were apparently carrying on at that point, which, and I don't know if that's something that, I don't know if that led to the breakup of the marriage with G.E. Smith, but I know that there was a lot of tumult apparently going on. But Gene Wilder seemed to be such a, not even a mellowing influence, but very much a, you know, they obviously seemed to be meant for each other at least that at that point.
And it's interesting that you should bring that up because it almost seems like that adds to the way Bill Murray has always played that kind of like, I'm the loser. I'm the lovable loser. Even when he's winning, there's still a part of him that will never kind of fully give himself that credit because I think maybe part of him wanted that to work out maybe, or just that kind of played into that ongoing aspect of his life. I've always just been incredibly moved by, you know, all the subtlety that goes on, not necessarily what is said, but what isn't, and if that makes any sense. And with Gilda, I mean, it's just falling, you know, everywhere, you know, around her, almost like an aura, so to speak.
The other thing about, and just to touch on that for a second, the other thing about Gilda Radner and with It's Always Something is that, I mean, I'm sure that these must have existed beforehand, but I think that that book specifically and the way that she really publicly dealt with cancer and, you know, just the devastating effect that it had on her and professionally and personally and her relationship with Gene Wilder, I think that that actually is the beginning of a different era of books and of, I don't want to say confessionals, that makes it sound too trite, but I think that I think books became a lot more open about things like that and situations that people were going through, and whether it was something that happened in their childhood, whether it was something that was happening then. I think that that book actually was the beginning of a bit of a watershed for things like that, because I don't know that it was talked about that publicly at that point.
Yeah. Yes. Well, interesting side note, when I was in high school, I made it to the national competition for speech and debate, and I was in a duo competition. We were doing, I think it was like some Neil Simon or I could never remember the name of the guy that wrote this piece, but it was from those in the know at the time. It was a very well trodden piece of man woman kind of relationship based material, and that seemed to be like the easy go to for high school kids. I remember distinctly in one of the rounds, myself and the girl that we were that I was working with, were sitting there waiting to go on, and the couple right before us that later went on to win the national contest in the duo category were doing an excerpt from a book based on the life and relationship of Gilda Radner and Gene Wilder. And it was seriously so heartbreaking that everybody in the room was moved. And it was like you could tell that the performers themselves were doing their best not to have that energy kind of affect their performance as well. And as soon as they get done, there's like this like eternity of silence. And then, okay, who's next? And then that horror realization that, okay, now we're going to try and bring some funny into the room. And it was just like, no. It's like trying to tell jokes at a funeral. Like, this is not going to go well at all. So we kind of got up there and almost was just like, we're going to kind of just take a pass on this. We were debating on whether to not do that or not. But, yeah, just seeing the sorrow because, like you said, they were retarded for each other.
Yeah.
The way that they fit. To see a picture of the two of them side by side, you're just like, yeah, these two people deserve to be together for eternity.
I think it was Steve Martin when he was hosting at one point, and he talked about Gilda Radner, and he played a piece that they had filmed. And I don't know if it was for SNL or not, but it was it was where they were dancing together.
That was Steve Martin. That was the opening for one of the episodes he hosted.
Yeah, which was just, I mean, it's funny when you think back on that era, you know, those early years of SNL, and everybody kind of came out of that. It's almost like no one from that era, or almost no one, kind of got away clean. Everybody, everybody had some sort of personal tragedy, it seemed like, it befall them, you know, or they you know, they found themselves marginalized professionally because of their experience on that show. You know, and Gilda is not just because of the cancer and the early death, but just because of the humanity that she brought to her character. She seemed to be, even then, I think she seemed to be the most beloved among the other cast members.
Yeah.
Where you would hear these early interviews with them, and they would talk about the energy in the show, and they would talk about the way that they all interacted with each other. And there was, you got the sense that she was almost like this a little sister character to people, which I know that she herself sort of resisted because she was very much wanting to be taken seriously, wanting to stand on her own two feet and be viewed as an independent comic. But there was just something, you just wanted to take her home and give her a bowl of soup, like, all the time. So.
Well, yeah, she had the anorexia bouts that, dealing with the death of her father, she kind of developed a weight issue, and that led into anorexia and bulimia, which, according to a biography, she got under control by the age of 16. But if you look at some of the episodes of SNL, you can see that there are some times where she's deadly thin in some of those episodes. And part of that could be the cancer, and part of it could be
sharing a dressing room with Lorraine Newman.
Exactly. So, I mean, the booger sugar abounds in that day and age. So that
brings to a conclusion another installment of Humor Me Comedy 101. Mr. Big Jim Willig, you can find him on Facebook, facebook.com/jwillig1. Yes?
Jim Willig 1.
Jim Willig 1. All right. Here's the thing.
Is that blood trickling out of your ear?
I at some point, I gotta just tattoo it on my hand or tie a string around some sensitive part of my body.
You should never have me back. I think that would just be just take the easy road.
I think it would be easier at this point if we were to go kill the other Jim Willig and take his identity, frankly.
Wear his skin like a suit.
Or that, sure. Okay. There you go. That's Jim Willig with Humor Me, Comedy 101. It is the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Here in just one moment, we will wrap up this week by giving you clue number 5. That is the official Friday clue for the Name That Snack Contest, brought to you by EH Vending. You can find EH Vending online at ehvending.com. That is ehvending.com. You can also call them if you like. They have two different numbers. You can call Josh, the owner, at 360-816-1853. That is 360-816-1853. Or James, the sales manager, 503-897-8204. That is 503-897-8204. So if you are an employee, if you are an employer, and if you are somebody who either has not had vending service at your business, or you find the vending service you got now is not meeting your current needs, or they're, frankly, if they're just jackasses, they don't deserve your money anyway.
That's
so
right.
And here's the thing. I mean, let's just be honest. How many times do you get a vending machine put in, or you go to some place and they got the vending machine in the kitchen, whether it's soda or whether it's snacks, or whether it's what, and it's just like the same crap you've seen a million times. And I don't mean just like a Snickers bar, because there's a classic element there. Your Milky Way, your Baby Ruth, that's a thing we can all agree on. But it's like you look at it and you're just, you know, and it's just like stale Mike and Ikes. And you're asking, is it like, who is hungry during the middle of the day and wants Mike and Ikes? No one. No one ever.
Clinically insane. Like, if someone says that they're hungry for Mike and Ikes in the middle of the day, have them committed.
Well, it's like, you know, I don't know, I'm really trying to get this report done. If I just had a box of Good and Plenty, you know, I would just like a thing.
Cinnamon.
Yeah, you know, or like Dots. You know, like who?
No one eats Dots.
No one eats Dots, and yet they exist. And it's like you'll see them in the machine, and you're like, well, who asked for these to be put in? I mean, it's like I don't understand. It is like the candy equivalent of like the tonic water bottle that you see there. And it's like, well, I'm not at a Holiday Inn, so I really have no discernible use for this. So if you're going to get any, I mean, really, let's be honest. If you're going to get any machine put into your place, one of the reasons that you do that, one of the great advantages, you can stock it with whatever you want. You could stock it with nothing but Cranky and Hershey's drops. I mean, so you could, you know. I'm saying it becomes a fiefdom over which you can reign supreme, a grand irremovable dictator of the caloric. So I mean, you know, just or you could take input from your employees, but I wouldn't recommend it. 503-897-8204 or 360-816-1853. You can also contact them on the web. That is ehvending.com. ehvending.com. So we now arrive at clue number 5. This is the 5th clue for this week. This is the 5th clue for this week, and if you are the first person to contact us via snack@rickemerson.com, that is the website for that. That is snack at rickemerson.com. You will win yourself a bag of goodness from E.H. Manning. And Jim, if you'll do me a favor, because people have actually asked this. They've asked what sorts of things are in the bags from E.H. Manning that we give away. So we've actually got a couple here that have not been given away yet. If you want to just real quickly before we give out the fifth snack.
What isn't in the bags?
I mean, there's some, I mean,
it's a hefty bag, too.
Okay, first of all, can you say that is substantial?
Very substantial. This is like a good, solid week's worth of like lunch goodies and snacks. We got energy drinks. We got cheddar jalapeno Cheetos. Snickers, which with is that peanut? Yeah, standard Snickers. All kinds of
chips, M&Ms, and more chips. Cheetos,
Hershey products.
That's what I'm saying. It's
a well-rounded. Seriously, it's a mixed bag.
I know you're not supposed to covet your neighbor's wife or ox or ass or whatever, but I mean, it's sometimes
in snack foods.
Sometimes a little coveting is proper. Sometimes coveting is that's what you got to do. So
breeds competition.
All right. So without further ado, we will give you your Friday clue for the EH Vending Name That Snack contest, ladies and gentlefolk.
Número cinco.
There you go. That is clue number five.
It's a
Wurlitzer.
Organ.
Yes, it's a Wurlitzer covered in peanut brittle.
It's monkey jerky.
Or murky, as we call it.
Monkey jerky sounds like you sound like a lab assistant whose English is
maybe monkey jerky.
It's monkey jerky.
What is the problem? Monkey jerky. Need tranquilizer. We want to thank our guests, including Mr. Big Jim Willig. Find him at facebook.com/JimWillig1.
Yeah, baby.
JimWillig1.
Next week, guests, including Mr. Seth Aaron from Project Runway and author Bill Carter. We come to you live each and every weekday from the studios of the Emerson News Network. Thank you for joining us. After a brief interlude here, we will have an encore of today's Legion of News program and an encore of this very fine radio show. It is Friday, February 18th, 2011, and that is The Frequency. Kenneth, as always, thank you for listening. Be safe. Have a good weekend. See you Monday. Bye now.
You're listening to the Emerson News Network.